permanent armament industry of vast proportion. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. We annually spend on military security alone.
January 1961, President Dwight D. Eisenhower's farewell address to the nation.
Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
November 1960, Senator John Fitzgerald Kennedy of Massachusetts wins one of the narrowest election victories in American history over the Vice President Richard Nixon by a little more than 100,000 votes. Alongside his beautiful and elegant wife, Jacqueline Bouvier, Kennedy is the symbol of the new freedom of the 1960s, signifying change and upheaval to the American public.
That all men are created equal.
The degree of mind and spirit that I possess will be devoted to the cause of freedom around the world.
Today, the proudest boast is being ideally now.
He inherits a secret war against the communist Castro dictatorship in Cuba, a war run by the CIA and angry Cuban exiles. Castro is a successful revolutionary frightening to American business interests in Latin America. This war culminates in the disastrous Bay of Pigs invasion in April 1961, when Kennedy refuses to provide air cover for the exiled Cuban brigade. Kennedy, taking public responsibility for the failure, privately claims the CIA lied to him and tried to manipulate him into ordering an all-out American invasion of Cuba.
El problema de Cuba.
In October 1962, the world comes to the brink of nuclear war when Kennedy quarantines Cuba after announcing the presence of offensive Soviet nuclear missiles 90 miles off American shores. Soviet ships with more missiles sail towards the island, but at the last moment, they turn back. The world breathes with relief. In Washington, rumors abound that JFK has cut a secret deal with Russian Premier Khrushchev not to invade Cuba in return for a Russian withdrawal of missiles. Suspicions abound that Kennedy is soft on communism. Kennedy also finds himself embroiled in Laos and Vietnam.
We've got our difficulties there, quite obviously.
Unless a greater effort is made by the government to win popular support, I don't think that the war can be won out there. In the final analysis, it's their war. They're the ones who have to win it or lose it.
Early that fateful summer, Kennedy speaks of his new vision at the American University in Washington.
What kind of a peace do I mean, and what kind of a peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana, enforced on the world by American weapons of war. We must re-examine our own attitudes towards the Soviet Union. Our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's futures. And we are all mortal.
Daily Bulletin looking from CBS News.
As the world turns.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
Boss, the president's been shot in Dallas 5 minutes ago.
Oh, no. How bad?
There's no word yet, but they think it's in the head.
Come on. Napoleon's has a TV set.
Apparently, three bullets were found. Governor Connally also appeared to have been hit. The president was rushed by Secret Service to Parkland Memorial Hospital, 4 miles from Dealey Plaza. We are told a bullet entered the base of the throat and came out of the backside, but there is no confirmation. Blood transfusions are being given. A priest has administered the last rites.
Any arrest of him later today?
Well, there's still a chance to end it. Come on, John. Pull through.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
He did so much for this country, for colored people. Why?
Not me, it's him. He's 30.
Shut the fuck up.
God, I'm ashamed to be an American today.
The President of the United States is dead. I have just talked to Father Oscar Hubert of the Holy Trinity Catholic Church. He and another priest tell me that the pair of men had just administered the last rites to President Kennedy.
Shortly after 12:30, as the president's motorcade neared the freeway entrance near the park on the west side of downtown Dallas, those terrible shots rang out. The president is dead.
The bullets were coming up over our heads. And that fence up on the mole. I seen his face when it hit. His ear blew off. And he turns us real wide. He kind of flopped over on his stomach. And with his foot sticking out.
None of us thought it could happen in America or any place else. And yet,
all this blubbering over there, no concern of a bitch. They're bawling like they knew the man. Makes me want to puke.
Duh, say, Chief, the president was shot.
A bullshit, brother. I don't see anybody crying for all those thousands of Cubans. That bastard condemned to death and torture at the Bay of Pigs. Goddamn peace treaties.
I heard shots from over there.
Well, I heard some shots from right over there.
How many shots?
I can't
That's
say.
That's what happens.
Maybe
they
three
got the niggers vote. They get together with the Jews and the Catholics. They elect an Irish bleeding heart.
Chief, now maybe you had a little too much to drink.
Bullshit. Here's the new frontier. Camelot and smithereens. I'll drink that.
A flash bulletin. Dallas police have just announced that they have a suspect in the killing of a Dallas police officer, J.D. Tippett, who was shot at 1:15 in Oak Cliff. That's a suburb of Dallas. Police are saying there could be a tie-in here to the murder of the president. The suspect, identified as Lee Harvey Oswald, was arrested by more than a dozen police officers after a short scuffle at the Texas movie theater in Oak Cliff. That's Sir Tippett was killed apparently. revolver, which was found on Oswald. There is apparently...
Oh, just shoot the bastard.
They should give him a medal for shooting Kennedy. Don't talk over Kennedy.
No, sir, I didn't. I don't know what I am charged with, but I emphatically deny these charges.
Well, the kid must have gone nuts, right? I said Oswald must have flipped.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just went ahead and did this crazy thing before anybody could stop him.
Yeah,
right?
I think I'll get out of here. I gotta get home, Chief.
Talking about. Yeah, who'd ever thought that goofy Oswald kid would pull a stunt like an assassination? Just goes to show you never can know about some people. Am I right, Jack?
Yeah.
Am I right, Jack?
Yeah.
Well, bless my soul. Huh? Yeah, all these years I thought you were on my teeth.
Yeah, sometimes I don't know. Are you kidding?
I couldn't be more serious, Jack. Your little red eyes of yours had me wondering about your loyalty.
Look at that. Who's been going through my file?
Huh?
You've been looking through my file, haven't you, you little weasel?
You're starting to get paranoid. You really are.
You're going through all my files. You're a goddamn spy.
Why the hell would I want to look through your files? Gee, I've seen enough here this summer already to write a book.
I always locked my files. You're the only one here today.
What do you mean you've already read a book?
Well, no, I mean, well, you know what I mean. I've seen a lot of strange things here. They're strange people.
You goddamn thing!
Stop!
It's your goddamn thing, you hear me, you little weasel? It's your goddamn thing!
Your name is Lee Harvey Oswald. O-S-W-A-L-D.
Did you shoot the president?
I didn't shoot anybody, no, sir. They have taken me in because of the fact I have lived in the Soviet Union. I'm just a patsy.
Oh, God, he sure looks like a creep.
I protested at that time. I was not allowed legal representation. During that very short and sweet hearing, I really don't know what this situation is about. Nobody has told me anything except that I'm accused of murdering a policeman. I know nothing more than that, and I do request someone to come forward to give me a legal assistance.
Were you ever in the Free Cuba Movement or whatever that's called?
That's the Fair Play for Cuba Committee.
What did you do in Russia? And what happened to your eye?
It seems pretty cool to me for a man under pressure like that.
A policeman hit me.
Willis. Okay, come on, sugar plums. It's past your bedtime. Oh, Maddie. Get a hold of yourself.
Several hours after the assassination, a disturbed
portrait
of Lee Harvey Oswald.
Fine, man.
Instead of the Marines, he apparently became fascinated by communism.
He is still believed to be a dedicated Marxist and a fanatical supporter of Fidel Castro and ultra-left-wing causes. He spent last summer in New Orleans and was arrested there in a brawl with anti-Castro Cuban exiles.
And apparently, Bob, Oswald had been passing out pro-Castro pamphlets.
Yeah, sorry to disturb you this late. Yeah, matter of routine, but we better get on this Oswald connection in New Orleans right away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to check out his record, find any friends or associates from last summer. And let's meet with the senior assistants and investigators day after tomorrow, all right?
That'll be on Sunday.
Sunday, yeah, at 11.
All right.
Thanks, Lou.
I would say that without any doubt, he's the killer. The law says beyond a reasonable doubt and to a moral certainty.
I thought it was a motorcycle backfired, and I looked over to my left, and the second shot hit him in the face.
We say the right one. A cheap World War II Italian-made Mannlicher Carcano was ordered from a Chicago mailing house and shipped to Oswald's alias, A. Heidel, post office box in March of 1963. This is the same rifle that was used to assassinate the president.
Now ties it up.
You did what?
Another nut.
maniac.
Jesus Christ, anybody can get a rifle in Texas.
As far as Oswald's associates, boss, the one name keeps popping up is David Ferry. Oswald was seen with him several times last summer.
Oh, David. Strange character.
Yeah, he's been in trouble before. He used to be a hotshot pilot for Eastern Airlines, but got canned after an alleged homosexual incident with
these backyard photos were found yesterday among Oswald's possessions in the garage of Janet Williams' home in Irving, Texas, where Marina Oswald and her children lived.
Yesterday mentioned somebody about Farron. Find it out.
Did he shoot the president?
What
did he tell
you?
Did he not shoot anyone? Did he shoot the bird man, good husband?
So it seems David Farron drove off on Friday afternoon from Texas. A source told Coleman he might have been a getaway pilot for Oswald.
What getaway pilot?
Hold your horses. What kind of source?
The anonymous kind, Chief.
I think I remember this guy, Ferry, speaking at a meeting of some veterans group, raining against Castro. Extreme sort of stuff.
We go back now to the base.
Susie, back up. They're ringing him out. Numa, turn it up.
Here he comes. Come on, here he comes. Get that stuff. Come on, let's get him.
Is there anything you want to say in your defense?
Oswald! Oh! What happened?
He's been shot!
He shot him!
He's been shot!
He shot him on TV! He shot him!
Oh, my God!
There's a man with a gun. There's
the guy in that hat.
So many cops in that place. What the hell were they doing?
Watching Mac.
Well, no trial now. Looks like somebody just saved a Dallas DA a pile of work.
Pandemonium is broken loose here in the basement of Dallas Police.
Lou, let's get David Ferry in here anyway.
Look,
what's wrong? This is crazy. Some of you have seen them, man.
Yesterday, in the midst of sorrow, the business of government went on. The president meeting with Henry Cabot Lodge, our ambassador to Vietnam, and members of his cabinet. The major subject was Vietnam, a crisis that does not pause for bereavement. And from this meeting came affirmations that the United States would continue its policy of aiding the new government of Vietnam in its war against the communist insurgents.
Chief, David Ferry.
Come on in, Dave.
Thank you for coming.
You remember me, Mr. Garrison? I met you on Coronado Lead Street right after your election. I congratulated you.
How could I forget? You made quite a first impression. And I've heard over the years you're quite a first-rate pilot, Dave.
Really?
Yeah, legend has it you can get in and out of any field no matter how small.
Huh.
I'm a bit of a pilot myself. Flew grasshoppers for the field artillery in the war. Hey, have a seat. Make yourself comfortable.
Mind if I smoke, Mr. Garrison?
How could I? Dave, as you know, President Kennedy was assassinated on Friday. A man named Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested as a suspect and was then murdered yesterday by a man named Jack Ruby. We've heard reports that Oswald spent the summer here in New Orleans, and we've been advised that you knew Oswald pretty well.
I never met anybody named Oswald. Anybody told you that has to be crazy.
But you're all aware he served in your Civil Air Patrol unit when he was a teenager.
No, if he did, I don't remember him. I mean, there were lots of boys in and out, you know?
Well, I'm sure you've seen this. Perhaps you knew this man under another name.
No, I never saw him before in my life.
Well, that must have been mistaken information we got then. Thanks for straightening it out for us. There's one other matter that's come up, Dave. We were told that you took a trip to Texas shortly after the assassination on Friday.
Yeah, now that's true. I drove to Houston.
What was so appealing about Houston?
I hadn't been there ice skating in many years, and I was with a couple of young friends, and we decided we wanted to go ice skating.
Dave, may I ask why the urge to go ice skating in Texas happened to strike you during one of the most violent thunderstorms in recent memory?
Spur of the moment thing. Storm wasn't that bad.
I see. Where did you drive?
We went to Houston, then Saturday night drove to Galveston, stayed over there.
And then Sunday?
In the morning, we went goose hunting.
You bagging any geese on this trip?
I believe the boys got a couple.
But the boys told us they didn't get any.
Come to think of it, they're right. We got out there where the geese were, and there were thousands of them all over the place. But you couldn't approach them. But why a bunch of birds?
Your young friends also told us you had no weapons in the car, Dave. Isn't it a bit difficult to hunt for geese without a shotgun?
Yes, I remember now. I'm sorry, Mr. Garrison, I got confused. We got out near the geese, and only then did we realize we had forgotten our shotguns. Stupid, right? Of course, we didn't get any geese.
I see, Dave. Well, thank you for your time. I'm sorry that this has to end inconveniently for you, but I'm going to have to detain you for further questioning by the FBI.
Why? What's wrong?
Dave, I find your story simply not believable.
Really?
What part?
Gentlemen, this afternoon the FBI released David W. Ferry of New Orleans. After extensive questioning and a thorough background check, the Bureau found no evidence that Mr. Ferry knew Lee Harvey Oswald or has had any connection with the assassination of President Kennedy. The special agent in charge would like to make clear that Mr. Ferry was brought in for questioning by the District Attorney of Orleans Parish. Not by the Federal Bureau.
I thought we were on the same side. The help business isn't theirs to say that.
It fast, wasn't it, the way they let him go?
They must know something we don't. Let's get on with our lives, gentlemen. We've got plenty of homegrown crimes to prosecute.
President Johnson has announced the creation of a blue ribbon presidential commission to probe the events in Dallas. The commission will be headed by Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, Earl Warren, and is expected to head off several congressional and Texas inquiries into the assassination. On the panel are Alan Dulles, ex-chief of the CIA, Representative Gerald Ford, John J. McCloy, former head of the Chase Manhattan Bank.
Fucking out of control.
All these hippies running around on drugs.
The way young people look, you can't tell a boy from a girl anymore.
I saw a girl the other day. She was pregnant. You could see her whole belly. And you know what she had painted on it? Love, child.
Oh, it's a mess down there, Jim. We've bitten off more Vietnam than we could possibly chew. Of course, it figures with that polecat Lyndon in the White House.
You know, I sometimes think things have gone downhill since John Kennedy died, Senator.
Don't get me started on that. Those Warren Commission fellas were picking that shit out of pepper. Nobody's gonna tell me that kid did the shooting job he did from that damn bookstore.
Here you go, Senator Long.
Oh, thank you, honey.
How about the FBI testified the rifle to see if it could be done?
Sure, three experts, and not one of them could do it. They're telling us that Oswald got off three shots with world-class precision from a manual bolt-action rifle in less than 6 seconds. And according to his Marine buddies, he's got Maggie's drawers. You know what that means? Wasn't any good. Average man be lucky to get two shots off. And I tell you, the first shot would always be the best. Here, the third shot's perfect. Then they got that crazy bullet zigzagging all over the place, so it hit Kennedy and Connelly 7 times. One pristine bullet, that dog don't hunt.
You know, something's always bothered me about that from day one, too. You think there were other men involved, Russell?
If I were investigating the case, I'd round up 100 of the world's best riflemen. Find out which ones were in Dallas that day. You've been dug hunting. I think Oswald's a good old-fashioned decoy. What'd he say? I'm just a patsy? You better believe it.
Jim, honey, dinner's just about ready. I've got a surprise for you tonight. Tried something new. Jim, dinner.
That was good. But, honey, do you realize that Oswald was interrogated for 12 hours after the assassination with no lawyer present and nobody recorded a word of it?
Huh.
I can't believe it. A police captain with 30 years' experience in a crowd of federal agencies had to know that with no record, anything Oswald says is going to be inadmissible in court.
Well, honey, why don't we talk about it at the dinner table? It's getting cold. Jasper, what are you doing in here?
Guess it's all right if I was
real blind. Sure it is. Honey, if I were handled a minor felon like that, it'd be all over the papers. And this is the alleged murder of the president. Yeah, in and again, credible testimony is ignored. Leads are never followed up, it's conclusion selective. There's no index. It's one of the sloppiest, most disorganized investigations I've ever seen. You know, dozens and dozens of witnesses in Dealey Plaza that day are saying they heard shots coming from the grassy knoll area in front of Kennedy, not the book depository behind him. But it's all broken down and spread around, and you read it, and the point gets lost.
I never did believe it.
Maddie, I'll do the dishes. You take care of all that. Not bad. Elizabeth, honey, your bedtime, too. Honey, that was 3 years ago. We've all tried so hard to put it out of our minds, you just keep digging it up again. You're the DA in New Orleans. Don't you think the Kennedy assassination is a little bit out of your domain? I mean, all those important people already studied it.
I just can't believe a man as intelligent as Earl Warren ever read what was in those volumes.
Well, maybe you're right. I'll give you 1 hour to solve the case so I can get these kids in bed. And then you're mine. Mr. Kennedy will have to wait until morning.
Daddy, look what I drew.
Well, that's something, Jasper. What is it?
It's a rhino in a cage. Mm-hmm. Can I stay up another hour?
I don't think so, son. Pickle and snap him in my two. What's your partner? All right. Good night, doodle bugs. Good night.
1 hour, you hear? Mm-hmm. Funny Saturday night day two are. Mama warned me this would happen if I married such a serious man.
Yes, she did, huh? Mm-hmm. Well, when I come up, I want to show you how Saturday night got a bit, huh?
Sealed off the area and I held off the trains till they could be examined. And there were some transients taken on at least one train.
Mr. Bowers, I believe you already talked to us about this matter before your deposition. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, is there anything else you told us that I haven't asked you about that you can think of?
Nothing that I can recall.
Witnesses excused.
Well, we got a long freight that was in there. We pulled some people off there and took them to station.
Do you mean some transients?
Tramps and hobos.
Were all those questioned?
Yes, sir. They were taken to the station and questioned.
And ask the question.
All right, let's go back to that Amos Hewins matter.
Yes, sir. Traffic had been cut off into the area since about 10. But there were three cars that came in during this time, from around noon till the time of the shooting. The cars circled the parking lot and left, you know, like they was checking the area. And one of the drivers seemed to have something he was holding up to his mouth. That last car came in about 7 to 10 minutes before the shooting. It was a white Chevrolet four-door Impala, muddy up to the windows. Towards the underpass, I saw two men. They were standing behind a picket fence. They were looking up towards Maine and Houston, following the caravan as it came down. One of them was middle-aged, heavy-set. The other man was younger. There were two other men. They were on the eastern end of the parking lot, and each of them had uniforms. At the time of the shooting, there seemed to be some commotion. I just am unable to describe flash of light or smoke or something, which caused me to feel that something out of the ordinary had occurred there on the embankment.
God damn.
Lieutenant Colonel testifies that Lee Oswald was given a Russian language exam as part of his Marine training only a few months before it defects to the Soviet Union. A Russian exam. I can't believe it.
Honey, it's 4:30 in the morning. I have five kids going
to
be awake in an hour.
I never knew a single man who was given a Russian test. Oswald was a radar operator. He'd have about as much use for Russian as a cat has for
these
pajamas.
Books have gotten to your mind, Mr. Garrison.
And then this colonel, he makes it sound like nothing. He says Oswald did badly on his test. He got only two more Russian words right than wrong. Huh. It's like me saying touchdown, he is not very intelligent because I beat him 3 games out of 5 the last time we played chess.
What are you going to stay up all night every night for what? So you'll be the only man in America read all 26 volumes of the world.
Do I have to spell it out for you? Lee Oswald was no ordinary soldier. He's probably in military intelligence. That's why he's trained in Russian. There's no accident. He's in Russia.
Go back to sleep.
God damn it. I've been sleeping for 3 years. Ready for a walking tour?
7:30 Sunday morning is not exactly fresh blood we're sniffing here, boss.
Old stains, Bill, but just as telling. I-31 Lafayette Street. Remember whose office this was in 63?
Sure, Guy Bannister. Ex-FBI man. Died a couple years ago.
Bannister headed the Chicago office. When he retired, he became a private eye here. I used to have lunch with him. John Birch Society, Minuteman.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Slightly to the right of Attila the Hun. He used to recruit college students, infiltrate radical organizations on campus. Headed the Anti-Communist League of the Caribbean. All out of this office. Come around here, I want to show you something. See that? Now take a look here. 544 Camp Street. 531 Lafayette Street. Same building, right? But with different addresses and different entrances. Both going to the same place. To the office upstairs. Guess who used this address? Lee Harvey Oswald. Now how do we know he was here? Because this office address was stamped on the pro-Castro leaflets he was handing out in the summer of 63 down on Canal Street. Now, these are the same leaflets they found in his garage in Dallas.
What's this? What the hell is this doing on this piece of paper?
After the arrest, 544 Camp Street never appeared on the pamphlets again.
Yes.
He was arrested that day for fighting with some anti-Castro Cubans. But actually, he had contacted them a few days earlier as an ex-Marine trying to join their anti-Castro crusade. When they heard he was now pro-Castro, well, they paid him a visit.
What is this bedead shit? You lied to me, you hypocrite! Liar, you son of a bitch! People, do not take this paper! This is communist propaganda!
Hey, Carlos, why did you hit me?
Come on, you pick up shit!
There was no real fight, and the arresting lieutenant later said he felt it was a staged incident. In jail, Oswald has a private session with Special Agent John Quigley of the FBI. Oswald is released, and Quigley destroys his notes from the interview. The arrest gets him a lot of publicity, and as a result, Oswald appears on a local TV debate.
But you are a communist.
No, Mr. Bringier. I am not a communist. I'm Marxist-Leninist.
You are not a communist, but you are a Marxist-Leninist? What is the difference?
And here's another one for you. What would you say if I told you Lee Oswald was trained in the Russian language when he was a Marine?
I'd say he's probably getting intelligence training.
Well, you run the Marines, who would be running that training?
Office of Naval Intelligence.
Take a look across the street. Post office. Upstairs in 1963, that was the Office of Naval Intelligence. Just by coincidence, Bannister, before he was FBI, was O&I. Now, what's that little saying they have?
Once O&I, always O&I.
Well, he likes working near his old pals.
Bill, Lou, we are standing in the heart of the United States government's intelligence community here in New Orleans. That's the FBI there, all right? That's the CIA. That's the Secret Service. That's the O&I. Now, doesn't this seem to you a rather strange place for a communist to spend his spare time?
What you driving at, boss?
We're going back into the case, Lou. Murder of the president.
Good Lord, wake me up. I must be dreaming.
No, you're awake, Bill, and I'm deadly serious. We're going to start by tracking down your anonymous source from 3 years ago. Now, how'd you find out David Ferrer drove to Texas that day?
Hell, I can't remember last night, let alone 3 years ago, boss.
You're not under cross-examination here, Jack. What I need is a little clarification about the night Guy Bannister beat you over the head. Now, don't tell me you don't remember that. Because you called our office. You called our office from your hospital bed, and you were hopping mad about it. Now, here's my problem. You told me you and Guy were good friends for a long time.
More than 10 years.
And he never hit you before?
No, he never touched me.
Yet on November 22nd, 1963, the day the president's murdered, the police report says he pistol-whipped you with a .357 Magnum. It also says you had an argument about the phone bill. Here, take a look at it. Well, does a simple argument over a phone bill sound like a believable explanation to you?
There's more to it than that.
How much more?
I don't think I should talk about it.
Well, I'd ask God. We were friendly, you know. Heart attack, wasn't it?
Well, you buy what you read in the papers.
You have other information?
I didn't say
you
that.
You have other information?
Well, I didn't say that. All I know is that he died suddenly. Just before the Warren report came out.
Why did God beat you, Jack?
Hell, I guess guy's dead. It don't matter no more. But it was about all those people that was hanging around the office that summer. See, I was never part of the operation, you know. I was just there taking care of their private highway, you know, as it came in for Guy. Not much did, but that's why I was there. It was a nut house. All Cubans come and go. I mean, they all look the same to me. Come on. Dave Ferry. We know about him?
Yeah, we know Dave. Was he there?
Mm-hmm. Well, he practically lived there.
Don't put this one up.
See, the whole thing, this was the whole cloak and dagger stuff, you know. They called it Operation Mongoose. Mm. Whole idea was they were going to train these Cuban exiles, you know, for another invasion of Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hell, Bannister's office, that was part of the supply line, you know, from Dallas through New Orleans to Miami.
Frenchie!
They were stockpiling arms, explosives.
All this right under the noses of the intelligence community in Lafayette Square?
Yeah, hell yeah, everybody knew everybody, you know, they were all part of the network. They were all working for the CIA. You know, pilots and then black operators and the civilians and the military. Hell, everybody in those days was running guns somewhere. Fort Jefferson, Bayou Bluff, Morgan City, you name it. So, McAllen, Texas, yeah, big gun run operation.
M1A1, select the switch, fully automatic, like a machine gun.
Bannister, where does he fit in all this?
He was running his camp up north of Lake Pontchartrain there. You know, Ferry was doing a lot of the training. They had a shooting range, a lot of tropical territory, you know, like he got in Cuba. There's some Americans were trained there, too, a few Nazi types, mercenaries.
That fairy, Jesus, he will. He was the craziest. He... Anyway, late summer, the whole the party was over. You know, because Kennedy didn't want another one of them Bay of Pigs, so he told the FBI, shut up the camps, you know, and confiscate the napalm, C4, and stuff like that. So I think that the G-men, they were just going through the motions for Washington. See, their hearts were still with their old FBI buddy Bannister.
Oswald?
Yep.
Yeah,
he was there, too.
He was there.
He was there. He was sometimes meeting with Bannister.
It's really giving me an allowance, you know, because I got expenses. I got a 12-dollar...
The door shut. Other times, you know, shooting the bull with Ferrier, whatever, but he was there, all right.
Anything more specific, Jack? It's important.
No, one more. One time, the secretary got upset. I
can't believe it, Mr. Bannister. Lee Oswald is down on Canal Street handing out communist leaflets supporting Castro.
It's okay, Delphine. He's with us. It's okay.
Is anyone else involved at Bannister's level?
Oh, yeah, one guy, I don't know. Big white hair. I saw him come in the office once, and he was out of place. You know, like a society guy. And I can't remember his name, but Oswald was with him. But he had something to do with money, because Bannister, you know, you never kiss anybody's ass. Ooh, he kissed his. Clay something. Yeah, that was his name, Clay. Clay.
Bertrand?
Bertrand.
Clay Bertrand?
Clay Bertrand. Well, I don't know. Maybe
no, that's
not.
Right. Clay Bertrand.
Go.
No, that's
no,
right.
I gotta go.
He was in the Warren report. He got Oswald a lawyer. Yeah. Was Kennedy ever discussed, Jack?
I don't know.
The assassination, Jack?
No. Never. Not with me. Look, I gotta go. That's
hold
all
on.
I'm gonna
hold
say.
Hold on, Jack.
No.
Hold on.
What's the problem?
Spell it out for you, Mr. Garrison.
Nobody knows what we're talking about here, Jack.
You are so naive.
When did you first do business with this Bertrand?
Pipe the Bimbo in Red.
Mm-hmm.
Lord.
Yeah, she's cute all right, but not half as cute as you, Dino.
Thank you.
Should try a legitimate line of business.
Why are you dancing on my head for, my man? We've been thick as molasses pie since law school.
Conning me, Dean. I read your testimony to the Warren Commission.
There you go again. Grain of salt.
You tell them the day after the assassination, you're called on the phone by this Clay Bertrand and asked to fly to Dallas and be Lee Oswald's lawyer.
Right.
That's pretty important, Dean. You also told the FBI that when you met him, he's 6'2". Then you tell the commission he's 5'8". Now, how the hell does a man shrink like that, Dean?
They put the heat on my man, just like you're doing. I gave him anything that popped in my cabeza. Truth is, I never met the dude.
Oh, wonderful. One likes friends that have friends.
Indeed. I don't know what the cat looks like, and furthermore, I don't know where he's at. All I know is sometimes he sends me some cases. So one day he's on the phone talking to me about going to Dallas repping Oswald.
You ever speak to Oswald in Dallas?
Hell no. Like I told that Bertrand cat, right off.
Cash your pieces?
This ain't my scene, man. I deal in Munich court. I'm a hacker nigga.
And how the hell did your name get the Warren Commission, Dean?
Like I told to the Washington boys, Bertrand called that summer and asked me to help the kid upgrade his Marine discharge.
Well, I was led to believe that Mr. Bertrand said that he would take care of
oh,
any...
Oh, that's fine. Hello. To whom am I speaking?
I'm Clay Bertrand. Whatever they owe, I'll guarantee.
There wasn't no conspiracy, Jim. If there were, why the hell didn't Bobby Kennedy prosecute it as Attorney General? He was his brother, for Christ's sake. How the fuck all those people could keep a secret like that, I don't know. It was Oswald. He was a fruitcake. You know, he
needed this
country.
Communication problem, Dean. I know you know who Clay Bertrand is, right? Now stop eating that damn crab meat a minute and listen. I'm aware of our friendship. But I want you to know, I'm going to call you in front of the grand jury. You lie to the grand jury. You've been lying to me. I'm going to charge you with perjury. Right now, I took 9 judges on right here in New Orleans, Dino. I beat them all. So am I communicating with you?
Is this off the record, Daddy-O? Good. In that case, let me sum it up for you real quick. If I answer that question you keep asking, if I give you the name of the big enchilada, you know, and this Bon Voyage Dino. I mean like permanent. I mean like a bullet in my head, you dig? Your mouse fighting a gorilla. Kennedy's as dead as that crab meat. The government's still breathing. You want to line up with a dead man?
No lips, Dino. Either you dance into the grand jury with the real identity of Claire Bertrand, or your fat behind's going to the Slimer. Now, you dig me?
You're as crazy as your mama. Goes to show it's in the genes. You have any idea what you're getting yourself into, Daddy-O? The government's going to jump all over your head, Jimbo, and go cock-a-doodle-doo. Good day to you, sir.
Attorney Garrison to see prisoner 5388, War Block 237, okay? We don't need no gates out there with that swamp. Many of them gone in there.
None of them come out.
Hey, Willie! Oh, Keith! We got visitors here. You don't give them no trouble now, you hear me, boy?
How you doing, Mr. Broussard?
Hey, let's go, Willie.
Keep it going, boys. No small fucking. Grab the good back over here.
Oh, thank you, Mr. O'Keefe, for this time.
Yeah, I got nothing but time, Mr. Garrison. Minutes, hours, days, years of them. Time just stands still here, like a snake, sun itself on the road.
Clay Bertrand, Willie.
Yeah, Clay. I met him sometime in June of 62, the Masquerade Bar. Dave Ferry took me there for the express reason to meet him.
For sexual purposes?
Well, yeah.
Did he pay you for this?
$20 each time. Hell, ain't no secret. That's what I'm in here for.
Anything else unusual about him you'd be able to describe in a court of law?
I remember he had some kind of thing wrong with his leg. He's limp. You know, don't get me wrong. He's not one of those limp wrists. He's a Butch John. I mean, you meet him on the street, you never snap. You can play poker with him, go fishing with a man, you never snap in a million years. One night we was over at Dave Ferry's place having a party. That was sometime late in the summer of 63. There was about 9 or 10 people there. Cuban. You know, friends of Dave's been doing some stuff in the bush with him. This place is a mess, man. Dave's mind is a mess. There's all these mice cages all over because he's working on this cure for cancer. Dave's smart, though. He's sharp. Speaks five languages. He knows philosophy, medicine, military history, politics. He said he wanted to be a priest, but they defrocked him because he was queer.
And that's where you met Oswald for the first time.
Yeah, strange guy. Dave introduced me.
Really, why don't you say hello to Leon Oswald?
Hey, how you doing, man? What the fuck is he doing here?
Well, fuck you, motherfucker.
Okay, okay, come on, come on. Leon's in a bad mood. He's excited. He's all right.
You said that this Leon was actually Lee Harvey Oswald.
Fuck yeah. Hey, man, I got no reason to lie to you. I'm already in jail.
Go on, with it.
Finally, they got out of there. And I found myself alone with Dave and this Leon. Two of the Cubans and this guy Bertrand. They pulled out these clippings he'd been carrying around. You know, he'd been obsessed with Castro and Kennedy for months. He started in again.
Now, fucking little ass wife closed down the camps, took all our C4, took 10,000 fucking rounds, 3,000 pounds of gunpowder, all our fucking weapons. I tell you, shit, you want to free Cuba? You gotta whack out the fucking beard.
Yeah, well, that psycho Kennedy won't let us. Our hands are empty. How can we kill him?
The real problem getting at him, Castro has informers on every block.
Bullshit. They got all kinds of new stuff. Like I can show you dozens of fucking poison just sticking in his food. He'd die in 3 days. No trace. We can put some in his beard, make his beard fall out. He looks fucking ridiculous without his beard.
The real problem is that fucking Kennedy. He's doing all kind of deals con ese hijo de la gran puta de Khrushchev. Licking his ass, lambiándole el culo, coño. An inspired act of God should happen here, okay? And put a Texan in the White House. La Ciro Comunista, mira!
Then the Cubans left. Dave was drunk now, really drunk.
I'll tell you
he
something.
Started in on Kennedy again.
Fucking weak's nose, because I will kill. Right in the White House. I'll stab him right in his fucking heart. Somebody got to get rid of this fucker.
Come on, Dave. You ain't never going to get that son, bitch.
No, it won't be long. Mark my words. That fucker will get what's coming to him. It could be blamed on Castro. The whole country will want to invade Cuba. All we gotta do is get Kennedy in open.
David. Always some harebrained scheme or another.
Oh!
What have we here? Let's have some more champagne. Shall we?
What about the Secret Service? The cops?
If it's planned right, it's no problem. Look how close they got him to go. Eisenhower was always riding around open top. We need 3 mechanics in 3 different locations. An office building with a high-powered rifle. Triangulation and crossfire, that's the key. That's the key. A diversionary shot gets the Secret Service looking the other way. Boom, you get the kill shot. Crucial thing is one man has to be sacrificed. Then in the commotion of the crowd, the job gets done. The others fly out of the country to someplace with no extradition.
Why don't we drop this subject? It's one thing to engage in badinage with all these youngsters, but this sort of thing can be so easily misunderstood.
I didn't think much about it at the time. It's just bullshit. You know, everybody likes to make themselves out to be something more than they are, especially in the homosexual underworld. But when they got him, man, I got scared. Real scared. And that's when I got popped.
You realize the things you're saying, Willie, are going to be attacked by a lot of different people.
Oh, bring all those motherfuckers on, man. Bring their college degrees in here. I got nothing to hide. You can't buy me. They can't buy me. I don't even need this damn parole. See, this is about the truth
about
coming
parole.
Out. You a goddamn liberal, Mr. Garrison. You don't know shit because you never been fucked in the ass. This ain't about justice. You think this is about justice? No, this is about order. Who rules? Because, see, fascism is coming
nobody
back.
Wants to buy you. Nobody wants to buy you. No one's promising you a parole here. I want to be perfectly clear about that. What I need to know is why. All right? Why are you telling us this?
Because that motherfucker, Kennedy, stole that motherfucking election. That's why. Nixon was going to be one of the great presidents till Kennedy wrecked this country. Got niggas all over the place asking for their damn rights. Why do you think we got all this crime now? He promised those motherfuckers too goddamn much, you ask me. Revolution's coming. Bullshit, man. Fascism is coming back. I'm going to tell you this. The day that communist son of a bitch died was a great day for this country. And I just hate to think that they blame it on some silly fucking Oswald. Didn't know shit anyway, man. People got to know. People got to know why he was killed. Because he was a communist. Go ahead, man. Go ahead. You put me on the stand. I'll tell the same goddamn story. Don't matter fuck all to me.
All right, Willie. Thank you. We'll be in touch.
All right. Hey, you know, you're not a bad-looking man, Mr. Galson.
Well, just move over to the other
not bad-looking at all. I get out of here, I'm going to come see you. We can have some fun.
None of their testimony is going to hold up in court, Chief. Hell, all 3 of them have reputations lower than crocodile pins.
That bother you, Bill? I always wondering in court why it is because the woman's a prostitute, she has to have bad eyesight. Now go find this Clay Bertram. Stop by checking out the court.
The 6 of us with almost no budget and in secret are going to solve a case that the Warren Commission couldn't solve.
I didn't pick you because of your legal skill, you know.
Gee, thanks, boss.
Because you're a fighter. Jack, a man is not afraid of bad odds.
Mr. Garrison, how are you? Remember me?
I certainly do. Did you vote for me?
I certainly did, sir. We sang together at the Royal Orleans, remember?
Oh, yeah, we sang, you're the cream in my coffee.
Garrison, we haven't seen enough of you lately.
Been too busy, Paul. Elected men, they can't have as much fun as they used to.
It's always nice to see you. Pleasure to serve you, always.
Yeah. How are you?
Nice to see you.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah. Welcome back, Lou. Paul.
Yes?
You think I could get a martini?
They're waiting for you, sir.
Perfect.
Keep that table on the bar, please.
Yes, sir. Paul. Find out anything on those hobos?
This photographer from the Dallas Times Herald got some great shots of them.
Never published.
Can't say that comes as a surprise anymore.
They took them to the sheriff's office, and they let them go. And no record of them ever being questioned. Take a good look, Chief. Any of them look like the hobos you remember?
These 2 look pretty young.
Not a single frayed collar, a cuff. New haircuts, fresh shave, clean hands, new shoe leather.
Well, who the hell are they then? Hi, Susie.
Hello.
Come on, sit down.
Late.
This could be it. This could be it. Let's start looking for it. What about that railroad man, Lee Bowers? Saw those men at the picket fence?
Graveyard dead. August this year. Single car accident on empty road in Midlothian, Texas. The doctor said he was some kind of strange shock when he died.
We need to find more witnesses, Lou.
Whether it was Rose Sharamy, or she said she was a dope runner for Jack Ruby, and she said that Ruby knew Oswald for years.
And we talked to her?
She did, too. Hit and run.
Why don't we go right to the horse's mouth, Chief? Jack Ruby's been rotting away in a Dallas jail cell for 3 years. Maybe he's ready to crack.
Can't do it, Bill. If we go to him, our investigation will hit the front pages by sunrise. All right, it'll blow up right in our face. Susie, what'd you find out on Oswald?
Negative on his tax records. Classified. First time I know a DA can't get a tax record. So I put together a list of all the CIA files on Oswald that were part of the Warren Report and asked for them. There are about 1,200 documents. And can't get one of them. All classified as secret on the grounds of national security. They gave me his grammar school records. It's a study of his pubic hairs. Lonely kid, no father, joins the Marines at 17. He learns Russian. He acts overtly Marxist, but he's stationed at a top secret air base in Japan where U-2 spy flights over Russia originate. He's discharged from the Marines, supposedly because his mother's sick, stays home 3 days, and then with a $1,500 ticket from a $203 bank account, he goes to Moscow.
Mr. Oswald, do you understand the severity of the action that you're about to take?
Yes, I do, sir, and I am also very familiar with the arguments that
I wish to renounce my citizenship and become a Soviet citizen. I'm going to make known to them all information I have concerning the Marine Corps.
And he disappears for 6 weeks, presumably with the KGB. Finally, they shuttle him to a radio factory in Minsk, where he lives as high on the hog as he ever has. He's given 5,000 rubles, a roomy apartment with a balcony, has affairs with local girls.
Makes sense. He's a spokesman.
But he never writes, speaks, or does any propaganda for the Russians. He meets Marina, whose uncle is a colonel in Soviet intelligence, at a trade union dance. She thinks he's Russian by the way he speaks. 6 weeks later, they marry, have a daughter.
The only explanation for the royal treatment can be that he did give them radar secrets. Or fake secrets.
6 months after he arrives in Russia, Francis Gary Powers' U-2 spy flight goes down in Russia. That plane was untouchable. Powers hinted that Oswald could have given the Russians enough data to hit it. And as a direct result, the peace summit between Khrushchev and Eisenhower failed. I can't help thinking maybe someone in our military didn't want the peace conference to happen.
Susie, come on.
Maybe Oswald was a part of that.
Susie,
it gets weirder.
You are an assistant DA. Remember, just stick to what you can prove in
facts?
Court.
Facts? You want facts?
Please,
Susie, don't get sidetracked.
From 1945 to 59.
How does he get back to the States? That's the point. All right. Does he have any problems with Uncle Sam?
No, none. No, the State Department issues him a new passport within 48 hours and loans him the money to travel. He's never investigated or charged by the Navy for revealing classified information or, as far as we know, debriefed by the CIA.
Son of a bitch should have been prosecuted as a traitor the minute he stepped off the boat. What about Marina? Does she have any problems getting out?
No, none either. No, it's bizarre. It's next to impossible to get Russian sweetheart back. This is a man who has defected once already. It's crazy. Ordinary people, they get blacklisted for having leftist affiliation.
Doesn't add up, does it?
Next thing we know, he's living in Dallas, Fort Worth, October 62, working 6 months at Jagger's Child Stovall. This is a photographic firm that contracts to make maps for the U.S. Army. Oswald becomes chummy with the white Russian community of Dallas, all rabid anti-communists. It's odd. His closest friend is an oil man named George DeMornschild, who's about 35 years older than Oswald, who is only 23 and supposedly broke. DeMornschild He is a member of the Dallas Petroleum Club, speaks five languages, and was in French Vichy intelligence during the war. Also rumored to have been a Nazi sympathizer.
I think you really talk like a redneck, man.
De Morenschild draws a picture of Oswald as an intellectual, well-read, speaks excellent Russian, a man who adored JFK.
Yeah, I think he's made some mistakes regarding Cuba. I think he's doing a pretty good job. If he succeeds, in my opinion, I think he'd make a great president, a really yes. handsome one, too.
That's scenery, Susie. Now, don't get sidetracked. This is the same man that, bottom line, nailed Oswald to the Warren Commission as a potentially violent man and linked him to the rifle.
Well, in that sense, Castro is an experimenter. Marinochka. He could go any way with that country. He could go the way of communism.
Yeah, but what you got there? Do you have a rival in there? Lee, tell me, what are you shooting at? Rabbits or fascists?
I hunt.
You hunt?
Mm-hmm.
Hillbillies.
We don't know. He's CIA. Let's circle him. Very probable.
Right.
Call him Oswald's handler.
The Oswalds are introduced by George De Morenschild to Janet and Bill Williams.
I'm an engineer for Bell Helicopter.
It's through Janet Williams in October 63 that Lee gets the job at the warehouse right smack on Elm Street at the book depository.
Presumably so he can now exercise his intellect stacking school debts at $1.25 an hour.
Marina fights often with Lee about many things. His secrecy, their lack of money. She said that Lee is not sexually adequate. Lee hits her on several occasions.
Now, at the age of 24, he rents a small room in Dallas under the alias of O.H. Lee.
Do you want to look at television? Are you all right, Mr. Lee?
No, thank you.
All I can find out about the Williams is that their tax returns are classified and that Bill Williams has links through his family to the CIA and does classified work for Bell Helicopter. Bill's convenient separation from Janet allows Marina to move into her house, where she suddenly becomes Marina's best friend. And there, Marina and Lee have a second daughter.
I have to go away. Yep, just for a short time.
What is the matter with this family?
I love Lee, and I sorry him.
You're sorry
for him? Yes.
When he's arrested, Marina buries him with the public. Her description of him is that of a psychotic and violent man.
I have too much facts, and facts tell me that Lee shot Kennedy.
After they kept her locked away for 2 months surrounded by federal people in fear she'd be deported back to Russia. Right, the poor woman was probably suffering from nervous exhaustion. They taught her how to answer. And when they think she's ready, they buy new dresses, polish her appearance, and wheel her out on cue.
I would like to thank the Warren Commission.
Now, Oswald was no angel, that's clear. But who was he?
I'm lost, boss. What are we saying here?
We're saying that when Oswald went to Russia, he was not a real defector. That he was an intelligence agent on some kind of mission for our government and remained one until the day he died. That's what we're saying.
Therefore, because Oswald pulled the trigger, the intelligence community murdered their own commander-in-chief. Is that what you're saying?
I'll go you one better, Bill. Maybe Oswald didn't even pull the trigger. Nitrate tests indicate he hadn't even fired a rifle on November 22nd. And on top of that, they didn't even bother to see if the rifle had been fired that day.
He had his palm print on the weapon.
Well, it went to the FBI, Bill. FBI didn't find a goddamn thing. He comes back a week later and one guy in the Dallas Police Department suddenly finds a palm print. For all we know, it could have been taken off Oswald in a morgue. There's no chain of evidence.
I never could figure out why this guy orders a traceable weapon to this post office box when he can go into any store in Texas, give a phony name, and walk out with a rifle which can never be traced.
To frame him, obviously.
There's a lot of smoke there. But there's some fire.
We're talking about our government here.
No, we're talking about a crime, Bill, pure and simple. Y'all got to start thinking on a different level like the CIA does. Now, we're through the looking glass here, people. White is black, and black is white. Just maybe Oswald is exactly what he said he was. A patsy.
It's unbelievable. You're here.
Yes, sir. This is where I was sitting.
shots came from near that wood fence over there, near the overpass. And I saw a man run from the fence toward those railroad cars.
I made it very clear to the Warren people that one of the shots came from behind that picket fence. I heard the report and saw the smoke come out 6 or 8 feet above the ground, right out from under those trees.
We, all four of us, all the railroad men, seen about the same thing. The smoke came from behind the hedge.
I was standing next to my friend, Mary Mormon, who took the photograph when he was killed. I stepped down to the curb and yelled, "Hey, Mr. President!
Look over here!"
And then shots rang out. Mary fell to the ground right away. She was yelling, they're shooting, get down. I just stood there watching. The driver had stopped. I don't know what was wrong with that driver. Then, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a flash of light in the bushes, and that last shot just ripped his head off. I looked up, and I saw smoke coming from over there on the knoll.
We came around here to look for tracks. It rained that morning, and we found a bunch. Cigarette butts, and someone had stood about here.
That's a good spot, Chief, for the headshot.
Everything was just frozen. Seemed like people weren't even breathing, like you were looking at a picture. Except for this one man. I saw this one man running from the corner of the book depository over towards the parking lot.
It was about 11 o'clock in the morning. And I was driving west on Elm Street toward the Triple Underpass in a rented car. A light blue Valiant. I will never forget that day. There was quite a bit of traffic, and I stopped alongside this green pickup truck. And I remember it being very noticeable because it had one of its wheels parked up on the side of the curb. And then when I saw the gun, I thought, well, Secret Service is not very secret. And then the next morning on Saturday, I went down to the FBI office, and the agents showed me some photographs, and I picked out three pictures that looked genuinely like the driver of the truck. That's the man.
You mean you identified Jack Ruby on Saturday?
That's right.
The day before he shot Oswald?
That's right. When I saw him on TV, I was shocked. I turned to my family and I said, "That's the man I saw in the truck."
But you didn't seem nearly so sure in your statement to the Warren Commission.
What about these others? You said one of them might be him?
They look a little bit like him, but I'm sure that this is the man.
Well, it was him I was chasing up the grassy knoll. I thought maybe our guys had shot back, and maybe we got one of them. When I got up to the parking lot, all I saw were railroad workers and Dallas's finest.
I am not. I don't know you. We gotta find the shooter.
I said you're coming with us. I want those pictures
in
your pocket.
I don't have any, son of a...
Shh!
He put a hurt on me, but
just
good.
Just smile and keep walking.
But they must have been watching the whole thing, because they knew everything Mary and I had done all day. Of course, I guess I wasn't too hard to find wearing that red raincoat.
How many shots did you say you heard?
4 to 6.
That's impossible. You heard echoes. Echoes. We have 3 bullets and 3 shots that came from the book depository. That's all we're willing to say.
No, sir. I saw a man shooting from over there behind that fence. Now, what are you going to do about that? You got to go out there and get
him. We have that taken care of. You only heard 3 shots, and you're not to talk about this with anybody. No one. Do you understand me?
Which is strange, because it's less than 20 minutes after the assassination.
Get her out of here.
I knew something was crooked as a dog's hind leg. Sure enough, when I read my testimony as published by the Warren Commission, it was a fabrication from start to finish.
Well, that's what bothers me, Mr. Garrison, is they've been altered. My statements... See, this one here says, Mercer could not identify any of the photographs as being identical with the person that she had observed slouched over the wheel of a green Ford pickup truck. Well, that is not true. I never said any such thing. I recognized him, and I told him so.
Let's take your time. Be sure.
I'm sure. And then here on the Dallas Sheriff's report, this is really strange. You see that notarized signature right there at the bottom of each page? That is not my signature. And there never was any notary present during any of my questioning.
Mrs. Mercer, as a former FBI man, it's difficult to accept this.
Beverly, tell Mr. Garrison about the Carousel Club.
Okay. Well, I used to go over there a lot to see Jack, and especially my friend Jada, who danced there. It was the real swinging spot in town. Everybody came. Businessmen, politicians from Austin, LBJ's friends. Dallas was a slow spoken town back then. I mean,
you chewed toothpicks, played dominoes, date a policeman.
But Jack, I mean, that was exciting. There were always cops there. Jack liked him around. He was always used to throw up the drunk himself. He was kind of a violent tempered man, actually.
Hey, how are
you? You know, everybody in those days knew Jack was a mob. Cops back then, they were bad. They'd shake you down for the money in your pocket. You know, there was this one case I'll never forget.
Beverly, what about Lee?
Beverly, come over here.
Well, one time I came in, and Jack introduced me to these two guys.
Hi, baby.
He says, Beverly, I'd like you to meet my friend Lee.
I want you to meet my friend Lee Oswald.
I don't remember the other guy's name. But he was a weird-looking guy. He had these eyebrows. It kind of looked like a buzzard. Well, Lee didn't make much of an impression. He was, well, he really wasn't very good looking, and he didn't look like he had any money. And he was in a bad mood, so I didn't pay him much mind. You know, I may not remember a name, but I always remember a face. And then a couple of weeks later, when I saw him on the television, I screamed, my God, that's him. That's Jack's friend.
Will you testify, Beverly?
I don't think so.
No, I thought when we came here, we had an agreement.
I don't want to become another statistic.
No, we could call you in, Beverly. We could call you in.
If they can kill the President of the United States, do you think they're going to think twice about a two-bit showgirl like me?
I understand the pressure you're under, Beverly. Don't think for a minute I don't.
We both do.
Mr. Chief Justice, you understand that I cannot tell the truth here in Dallas? There are people here who do not want me to tell the truth? Who don't want me to have a retrial?
Mr. Ruby, I don't see why you don't just tell us now.
My life is in danger. If you request that I go back to Washington with you, that is, if you want to hear further testimony from me, can you do that? Can you take me with you?
No, that could not be done. There would be no safe place for you. We're not law enforcement officers. Mr. Ruby, there's a great deal at stake in this matter.
See, if I'm eliminated, there won't be any way of knowing any bit of the truth pertaining to my situation. And consequently, a whole new form of government is going to take over this country. Yeah, and I know that I won't live to see you some other time. Because I want to tell the truth, and then I want to leave this world.
Zapruder film establishes 3 shots in 5.6 seconds. Here. I'm Oswald.
Time me.
Go.
Time?
Between 6 and 7 seconds.
And that's without really aiming.
Key is the second and third shots came almost right on top of each other. It takes a minimum 2.3 seconds to recycle this thing. The other problem is there was a tree there, blocking the first 2 shots from the time they occurred in the Zapruder film.
Didn't J. Edgar Hoover say something about that? Leaves are falling off in November?
It was a Texas live oak, Chief. It sheds its leaves the first week of March. So you take this Carcano, world's worst shoulder weapon, and you try to hit a moving target at 88 yards through heavy foliage? No way. Here. The FBI tried 2 sets of tests. Not one of their sharpshooters could match Oswald's performance. Not one. And Oswald was at best a medium shot. The scope was defective on it, too. I mean, this is the whole essence of the case to me. The guy couldn't do the shooting. Nobody could. and they sold this lemon to the American public.
The Zapruder film was the proof they didn't count on, Lou. We gotta get our hands on it.
That means we have to subpoena Time Live.
Let me ask you something, Lou. Why not just shoot Kennedy coming up Houston? There's plenty of time. He's out in the open.
I know, I keep asking myself the same thing.
It's a funnel shot.
Even if you miss him for the first shot, if he accelerates, you still got him for the second shot. No, the only reason for waiting to get him on Elm is you got him in a triangulated crossfire. Right? You put a team there, down at the fence, for a frontal shot, flat, low trajectory. Put a third team down here, in this building here, on a low floor.
Kennedy gets the kill zone there, it's a turkey shoot. How many men?
Okay. Not one shooter, except one spotter on a radio, maybe three teams. I'd say these are professional riflemen, too, Chief. They're serious people. Hunters. Patient. Takes skill to kill with the rifle, Chief. You gotta figure that's why there's been no execution of a chief executive with one in 200 years. 200 years. Three. Two. One. Main Street's over there.
Right.
Original parade route on the way to the trademark?
Mm-hmm.
It's too far, right?
Too far.
Impossible shot. So they change the parade route. Bring him down here. Moving at a normal 25 miles per hour. They knew the motorcade would have to slow down to about 10 miles per hour. Make that turn there. And that's where he got him.
Who do you think changed the parade route, Lou?
Beats me. Secret Service, city officials, Dallas police.
You know who the mayor was at the time?
Oil Cabell.
Guess who his brother is?
Who?
General Charles Cabell.
Who?
Deputy director of the CIA. Kennedy fired him in 61 because of the Bay of Pigs fiasco. Moved back to the Pentagon, called Kennedy a traitor. When he came to New Orleans to address the Foreign Policy Association, you know who introduced him?
Who?
My friend Clay Shaw.
And the Warren Commission calling?
His boss was the one on the Warren Commission who handled all the leads to the intelligence community.
Alan Dulles.
Head of the CIA since 53. Kennedy fired them both. Cabell was a deputy for 9 years. Talk about the Fox investigating the chicken coop. Now we'll have to subpoena them both.
Sure I know him. He comes around the quarter.
Who is he, Joe? I've been to all the bars. Nobody wants to talk.
Why should they talk to you? I told your uncle I never met a lawman who wasn't a bum. The big shot businessman. I seen him on the TV news ladder with all the other big shots. The guy's a fag, you know. Goes by another name.
What's the other name?
Shaw. Clay Shaw.
Clay Bertrand is Clay Shaw. The guy who used to run the International Trademark.
Yeah. What's the big mystery? Everybody down here knows the guy.
Then why does he call himself Bertrand?
Who gives a shit what he calls himself? Hey, what about that grand jury thing? You think you're going to give us a little help on that? I hope so. We could use it.
Your hunch was right, boss, but it's even spookier than we thought. Starting in September 63 on, 2 months before the assassination, there are sightings of Oswald all over Dallas, buying ammunition, getting a telescopic sight fixed, going to rifle ranges. Early November, at a Dallas downtown Lincoln Mercury dealership where he tells the salesman, Albert Bogard,
take it out for a test drive.
Despite the fact he has no license, And from what Marina says, doesn't know how to drive. He hits the curves like A.J. Foyt at the Indy 500. Bogart Lake told his boss he drove like a madman.
Okay, $300 down now, Mr. Oswald. You can drive out of here.
What? What is he? No honest working man can afford to buy a car in this goddamn country anymore. Maybe I'll have to go to Russia and buy a car.
Really dumb dialogue, like he's trying to draw attention to himself. A real moron. He walks out. Salesman remembers him as about 5'7", but we know from Oswald's draft card that he was actually 5'11".
Other witnesses see him on several separate days at different firing ranges. And then one time, November 9th, he decided he needs some practice on the target of the guy next to him.
I ain't paid $2 for a target just to have someone else shoot at it.
Hey, I'm sorry, buddy. I thought I was shooting at that son of a bitch, Kennedy.
There's a cockroach crawling across a white rug.
Then he shows up at Sylvia Odio's, a Cuban lady in Dallas working in the anti-Castro underground. The two Cubans introduce him as Leon Oswald.
¿Qué trajo el norteamericano?
Because he's a friend of
something about the man bothers her. About 48 hours later, one of the Cubans calls him back.
Oh, yeah. What do you think of Leon Oswald last night?
I don't care. I don't know Oswald.
What he said to us, he said, you Cubans don't have any guts because Kennedy should have been killed after the Bay of Pigs.
Some Cubans should have done it.
It's like he's given her information she doesn't even ask for. She's scared, doesn't see him again till she sees Oswald's picture in the paper. But the Warren Commission says that Sylvia has bad eyesight because they have Oswald in Mexico at this time trying to get back into Cuba. The CIA has a camera outside the Cuban embassy, and they say that this is Oswald in Mexico. Now,
if this is Oswald, it must be our third Oswald.
It's interesting the extent to which the Warren Commission went to make him a communist. Beginning to think the whole point of the Mexican episode was to lay the blame at Fidel Castro's door. I mean, if Oswald was someone purporting to be Oswald had gotten into Cuba, come back, then killed the president, the American public once again would have supported a Cuban invasion.
I even have doubts about this photo, Bob. This pretty much convicted Oswald in the public's mind, but Oswald told Captain Fritz during his interrogation that the photo was fake.
It's not me.
That came from Janet Williams Rudd.
Well, I never saw this picture. That is my face, but my face has been superimposed. The rest of the picture is not me at all. I have done a lot of photographic work, and that picture was made by someone else.
I took this picture to two experts. Look at the way the shadows on the nose fall in a straight line like it's high noon. But the shadow down here on the ground reads more like late afternoon or early morning. It's not the same time. Also, look at the crop marks across the chin. Seems like this head is pasted onto somebody else's body, implicating him with the rifle and the gun.
So who the hell are you, Alan Tidell or Lee Oswald?
Well, you're the policeman. You work it out.
Now it gets positively spooky. In January 1961, in New Orleans, at the Bolton Ford dealership, when the Oswald we know is in Russia, there's a man using the name of Oswald to buy trucks for the Friends of Democratic Cuba. Salesman never sees him again. But guess who's on the articles of incorporation of the Friends for Democratic Cuba?
Who?
Guy Bannister.
Ooh.
Bannister has someone using the name Oswald to buy the trucks. Hoover at the FBI writes a memo dated June of 1960 that someone could be using Oswald's passport and identity.
God damn, they put Oswald together from day one. Like some dummy corporation in the Bahamas. You just move him around a board. Anybody want to quit? Dumb question. Put your hands down.
Hey, Bill.
I found Clay Bertrand.
Who?
Grab your socks and hose and pull. Clay Bertrand is Clay Shaw.
Damn.
Shaw?
Yeah.
Director of the trademark?
Former director of the trademark.
That's incredible.
Can you get some sworn statements?
Now, that's going to be tough. Nobody is talking.
I think we should have Mr. for a little chat.
Oh, honey, I hate for him to get dragged into this. He's done so much for the city with all that restoration in the quarter. Remember we saw him at the Valley High fundraiser? He seems like such a nice man.
Honey, it'll be off the record. I'll bring him in on a Sunday. Quiet little chat between gentlemen.
In heavy fighting in Vietnam today, 7 more American soldiers died and 23 were wounded. The body count for this week now stands at 67 Americans and 626 enemy soldiers killed in action. President Johnson, meanwhile, said he regretted there is no end in sight to the war in Vietnam. 500,000 American troops are now fighting.
We face more cost, more loss, and more agony.
Come on outside.
For the end is not yet.
Come on, honey, that's the kid's job. All right, you know I don't like these tribal rituals anyway. Besides, I told you I'm talking to Clay Shaw this morning.
Honey, we're going to Antoine's with the kids like we do every year.
No, I told you I was talking to Shaw.
Well, why in the world did you do it in the middle of Easter Sunday?
Because when I scheduled it, I didn't realize it was a holiday.
Honey, look at the calendar.
Liz, why didn't you say something?
You said eighth Sunday, not Easter Sunday.
Clay Shaw's important.
We're not.
I didn't say that, Liz. I didn't say that.
You're missing most of your life, and you don't even know it, honey. The kids are missing out, too. You're not the only
but
one
I'll
they
rush,
can sacrifice.
And I'll be here by you, I promise. Okay, now... You just go ahead without me.
Mr. Garrison, what can I do for you on Easter Sunday?
I'm sorry, Mr. Shaw, to interrupt this holiday, but I feel this is a conversation we might better have out of the everyday bustle in this office.
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, in an investigation we're conducting, your name has come up a number of times.
I wouldn't imagine where.
We recently talked to a number of men who claim to know you. Are you acquainted with David Logan?
No, never heard of him.
A Perry Russo?
No.
A Willie O'Keefe?
No, I don't believe I know anyone by that name.
And Mr. O'Keefe told us he met you at the Masquerade Bar down in the Quarter. And several evenings later, you had him over for dinner at your apartment on Dauphine Street. Do you recall that?
Of course not. I don't know this man. Still my heart. Obviously, then, I wouldn't have him over for dinner.
If you like squab. Is it champagne?
Perhaps a few more details about the evening will refresh your memory. Mr. O'Keefe told us dinner was served by a uniformed waiter, a colored man. He particularly remembered that you sat at one end and he at the other, which he found rather unusual because the table was so long.
How was your moves?
Does that bring back memories of Willie O'Keefe?
Not at all. On the other hand, I do have a lovely Chittendale dining table, and I often have a friend over sitting at one end while I sit at the other. It's precisely the point of a long dining table. The splendor of the meal adds to the enjoyment of it.
I would imagine that a uniform waiter helps.
It adds a taste of elegance, for which I must confess a weakness now and then. I call him Smedley. His real name is Frankie Jenkins, but I could hardly imagine anything more uncouth during dinner than my turning toward the kitchen hollering, Frankie! Where is all this leading to, Mr. Garrison?
After dinner, you paid him to have sex.
That is absolute nonsense. The Quarter is filled with vivid imaginations, my dear Mr. Garrison. Begrimy young hoodlums who will say and do anything, as you well know.
In the course of that night,
well
Mr.
Know.
O'Keefe told us that a man named David Ferry stopped by the house along with another young man.
Who?
David Ferry.
No, I don't believe I know anyone by that name. Of course, never having met Mr. O'Keefe, I can hardly admit Mr. Ferry.
Mine, Mary. Mine.
But the four of you parted early into the morning hours. Take a look at this picture.
Well, I'm sure I've never met anyone with such bizarre appearance.
Does the name Clay Bertrand mean anything to you?
Clay Bertrand. I believe there was a man with a name similar to that worked over the Chamber of Commerce. Is that the man you had in mind?
No, it was not. Mr. Shaw, can you identify this man?
Naturally. Are you claiming, Mr. Garrison, that Mr. Oswald also had dinner with me?
Mr. Shaw, have you ever met Lee Harvey Oswald?
You really have me consorting with a sordid cast of characters,
don't
you?
Please answer the question.
Of course not. Such a pity, that assassination. In fact, I admired President Kennedy, a man of true panache, wife of impeccable taste.
Well, why don't we just go ahead and order without you, Daddy? I don't
want to mind. I want Shirley Temple.
Okay, here's
what
you want to go.
Me too.
Daddy,
Mama. Soon,
he's coming soon.
He's real sorry he couldn't start with us, but he promised he'd be here.
Daddy never keeps his promises.
Mr. Shaw, this is an Italian newspaper article saying that you were a member of the board of Central Mondo Commerciale in Italy, that this company was a creature of the CIA for the transfer of funds in Italy for illegal political espionage activity. It says that this company was expelled from Italy for those activities.
I'm well aware of that asinine article. I'm thinking very seriously of suing that rag of
a newspaper. It also says that this company is linked to the Schlumberger Tool Company here in Houma, Louisiana, which helped provide arms to David Baer and his Cubans.
Mr. Garrison, you're reaching.
Am I?
I'm an international businessman. The trademark which I founded is America's commercial pipeline to Latin America. I trade everywhere. I am accused, as are all businessmen, of all things. I somehow go about my business, make money, help society the best I can, and try to promote free trade in this world.
Mr. Shaw, have you ever been a contract agent for the Central Intelligence Agency?
And if I were, Mr. Garrison, do you believe I would be here today talking to somebody like you?
People like you don't have to, I guess.
May I go?
People like you, they just walk between the raindrops.
May I go?
Yes.
Regardless of what you may think of me, Mr. Garrison, I am a patriot, first and foremost.
I've spent half my life in the United States military, serving and defending this great country, Mr. Shaw. And you're the first person I ever met who considered an act of patriotism to murder his own president.
Now, just a minute, sir. You are way out of line.
I'm sorry, Mr. Shaw. It's getting late. That's all the questions we have. Thank you for your honesty and for coming in today.
I enjoyed meeting with you, gentlemen. And you, Miss Cox. It's most pleasant. I wish to extend to each of you, and to each of your families, my best wishes for a happy Easter.
One may smile and smile and be a villain. God damn it, we got one of them.
Did you see that?
Day.
Daddy, where
have
you been?
My centerpiece.
Liz, I'm really sorry, but the meeting took much longer than expected.
Just a second, Jim.
We waited for hours, Jim. Honey, you could have telephoned.
I know. I don't know what to say, except I'm sorry. All right? I just don't have rabbits on my mind.
You know what I think?
Daddy?
I think you care more about John Kennedy than your own family. All day, the kids are asking, where's Daddy? What am I supposed to tell your kids, Jim?
I don't know what to tell them. How about the truth? I'm doing my job to make sure they grow up in a country where justice won't be an arcane, vanished idea they read about in history books.
That sounds real
bad. Like
dandy.
The dinosaurs or the lost continent Atlantis.
But you gotta replace a husband or a father on Easter Sunday.
Well, it's gonna get worse, Liz. Well, who are you going to brag to about, baby?
You know who killed President Kennedy? Was there a conspiracy here in New Orleans?
Excuse me, gentlemen.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Congratulations, boss. You're page one.
And
It ain't pretty. It says we've spent more than $8,000 on unexplained travel and investigative expenses in a period since November 1966.
God damn.
They went to the public records. They got the vouchers that we requested for the withdrawals.
Shaw must have gotten him on our tail.
They could have been Barry, Martin, Andrews, any of them.
Damn it. We didn't talk to Ruby because of them and they're on our asses for a measly $8,000.
They hunted down the news. It's their business.
Well, you'd at least think they'd attempt to understand what we're trying to do.
Well, getting angry doesn't accomplish a damn thing. Now, well, this changes everything now, doesn't it?
What do you mean?
Well, either we pull out now or we go through some heavy flack together. Bear in mind, each of you, this may affect the rest of your careers, your lives. Any one of you who want to pull out now, I assure you, I will bear no ill feelings towards that person. I'll reassign you to regular duties. That is, then. Thank you. It means a great deal to me. I'm giving this office $6,000 from my National Guard savings account so we can continue. I'll make speeches where I can and pick up additional money.
Garrison, what shall I tell them? They're piling up outside the door. They want a statement. The phones are going crazier than bugs on a cake.
Neither confirm, deny, nor discuss, Sharon. Goodbye, ladies. Gentlemen. I'm going home to where I can get a decent day's work done.
Mr. Garrison's own silence on the subject has raised some interesting questions. With taxpayer money, has he uncovered some valuable new evidence? Or is he merely saving the information which will gain for him exposure at a national level? Mr. Garrison, it seems, should have some explanation.
Yeah. Did your office plant that garbage in a fucking paper?
Who's this?
You know exactly who the fuck this is.
Dave?
Yeah, you got it. Listen, since you're the only straight shooter in that fucking office,
I'd like a fucking answer from you. Did you plant it?
If you think we're out of our minds, the whole building's been a zoo since that broke. We can't get a thing done. Reporters crawling everywhere. You think about that?
Somebody planted that fucking story. Somebody tipped off the press. I'm one of fucking Garrison suspects. I can't go home.
The fucking maggots are everywhere. Do you know what you've done to me?
Hey, calm down, Dave. What?
From here on, I am a fucking dead man. A dead man.
Dave, you weren't even mentioning the story. Don't jump to conclusions.
Look. Meet me in the lobby of the Fontainebleau in 20 minutes.
I guarantee you the boss will protect you. He likes your mind.
I guess, you know, I just don't know who to trust anymore, you know? I suppose I could use a pot of hot coffee and a few packs of Luckies, huh? So you got anything new on the investigation?
Who are you scared of, Dave?
Me? Everybody. Agency, mob, Cubans. That's it, follow the Cubans. Check them out. Here, Miami, Dallas. Checked out a guy named Eladio Del Valle. He used to be my paymaster when I flew missions into Cuba. Somewhere in Miami, you're on the right track. Hey, don't be writing this down. I ain't cooperating here with no one. What's going on here? There's a death warrant for me. Don't you get it? Damn. Wait a minute. You ain't bugged, are you? You ain't some bitch, Lou. Are you?
Dave. I always play square, no bugs. I'd love to have you go on the record, but I'm in no hurry. Whenever you're ready.
I ain't slept since that shit article come out. Why'd you guys have to go and get me involved with this?
Did we get you involved or did Clay Shaw, Dave?
Cocksucking faggot. He got me by the balls.
What do you mean?
No, photographs, compromising stuff. He used them too. Agency place for keeps. I knew Oswald. He was in my Civil Air Patrol unit. I taught him everything. He's a wannabe, you know? Nobody really liked him because they thought it was a snitch. But I treated him good. He talked about his kid, you know, really wanted her to grow up with a chance, but... What's this? What's going on here?
Ain't nobody coming in.
Just room service. I got it. Okay. Thank you.
Black, just give it to me. Black. Shit, my neck is killing me. I got cancer. I've had it for years. I've been working with mice, you know, trying to find a cure.
Did you ever work for the CIA?
You make it sound like some remote fucking experience in ancient history. Man, you don't leave the agency. Once you're in, they got you for life.
Shaw?
Shaw? Shaw's an untouchable. Highest clearance. Shaw? Oswald, the Cubans, all agency.
What about Ruby?
Jack was a pimp. He was a bagman for the Dallas mob. He used to run guns to Castro when he was still on our side. We almost had Castro with us. Then we tried to whack him. Everybody's flipping sides all the time. It's funny games, man. Funny games.
What about the mob, Dave? How do they figure in this?
The agency, too, man. CIA and the mafia working together. Trying to whack out the beard. Mutual interest. They've been doing it for years. There's more of this than you could dream. Well, check out something called Mongoose. Operation Mongoose. Government, Pentagon stuff. They're in charge. But who the fuck pulls whose chain? Who the fuck knows? Oh, what a deadly web we weave when we practice the deceit.
And who killed the president?
Oh, man, why don't you fucking stop it? Shit, who did... This is too fucking big for you, you know that? This is... Who did the president? Who killed Kennedy? Fuck, man! It's a mystery! It's a mystery wrapped in a riddle inside an enigma! The fucking shooters don't even know, don't you get it? Fuck, man! I can't keep talking like this. They're gonna fucking kill me! I'm gonna fucking die! Son of a bitch! I don't know what happened. Fuck! All I wanted in the world was to be a Catholic priest. Live in a monastery, pray, serve God. I had one terrible fucking weakness. And it defrocked me. And then I started to lose everything.
It's gonna be okay, Dan. You just talk to us on the record. We'll protect you. I guarantee it.
They'll get to you, too. They'll destroy you. They're untouchable, man. I'm so fucking exhausted I can't see straight.
Boss, I'm telling you, something or somebody's putting tremendous heat on David Fair. If we sit on our behinds any longer, I don't think the guy's going to hold on.
Look at this bullshit. He keeps changing what he says. We can't possibly call him to a grand jury.
Watch the language, would you please?
My instinct is that Ferry's going to keep on deteriorating. We'll end up getting more out of him when he finally cracks.
Oh, bullshit. Now, if you start...
If we call him in now, he might freeze up. We'll lose the best shot we ever had.
You guys don't get it, do you? He can't go down any further. We got to protect him full time.
We don't have enough friends to protect anybody. I know what you're going through with Ferry, Lou. All right, we'll talk tomorrow. I got a plane to catch. Going to Washington.
Washington?
Yeah, interestingly, he says he's closely connected to these events, but he won't come down here.
I wonder if there's Cuban paymaster Eladio Del Valle in Miami. I tell you, I need more men. I got to get him in, boss. I can't even pull the teams to watch Ferry. Listen, I gave this man my word. This is our case. Oh, for God's sake, Newman, I'm pleased.
I got something to show you. I think you'll find it very interesting.
Newman, what is that?
No, wait. Found this in your office. We think the conference room is also bug-headed to phones. We're going to have to debug the whole
bug
place.
Bug in the DA's office. This is outrageous.
Drive on for you.
Look, you can believe what you want, but we're going to have to be more careful. All these new volunteers, I mean, any one of them.
Okay, you handle it. Right? I don't have time for this nonsense. Well, we obviously got the bastards worried now. I'm coming to Washington.
Dave Ferris dead. Found his body in his apartment a couple hours ago.
Like, Nick?
I don't see any violence, Jim. Heart attack, maybe an aneurysm.
Looks like natural causes.
This is address and no one and no signature. To leave this life is for me a sweet prospect. I find nothing in it that is desirable, and on the other hand, everything that is loathsome goes on and on. Daily, we are propagandized more and more about a rising crime rate.
Pretty flowery for Dave Ferry.
Thyroid condition. Raises the metabolism, Will. David Ferry strike you as the kind of person with a low metabolism?
Hardly. I'd say the opposite. Hypertension.
You know, Ferry was the only one to express any kind of remorse about the whole thing. I think it got him killed.
Lou, boss. More bad news from Miami. They found Ferry's Cuban friend Eladio Del Valle today. Hacked to death with a machete in his car. He was tortured, shot in the heart at point-blank range, and his skull split open with an axe.
Ain't that the devil's press?
Find another note. Same thing. No name, no signature. When you receive this, I will be quite dead, so no answer will be possible. I offered you love. All I got is...
Must have been hard-pressed to come up with that one.
Can I have a word with you? What would happen if a man suffering hypertension were to take an entire bottle of Prolord?
He'd die pretty quick. Either a heart storm or a ruptured blood vessel in the brain.
Can you ascertain if there's Prolord in his system?
Not in a routine autopsy. But if we looked at the spinal fluid, there might be a high level of iodine, but it's difficult to know. What you thinking, Jim?
No, it doesn't make sense, Nick. I mean, the man's afraid of dying, and he kills himself in a way that leaves no trace. But he leaves two unsigned suicide notes.
If it's a suicide, I've seen weirder, Jim.
The fact is, he's gone, Chief, and so is our case.
Unless we go for Shaw now.
With whose testimony? Willie O'Keefe, a male prostitute? Jack Martin, a drunk? Vernon Bundy, a dope fiend? Shaw's got respects, Lou. Newspaper editors, American Bar Association.
I agree
Shaw's going to get whacked. Now, how many corpses is he going to take before you lawyers figure out what's going on?
You watch your mouth, Lou. Barry did this to himself. Where you going, boss?
I don't know, Bill.
Hey, where you at, Frank? You're wasting your time here. Big Jim gave strict orders. No FBI allowed.
It's you I want to talk to, Bill.
No. Boss will fry me and hog fatty when I talk to you.
Boss got a serious problem, Bill. Real serious. You know what's been going on over at your office.
Yeah, I guess you do.
You got nothing, Bill. I'm talking to you as a friend now. You're riding on the Titanic. Time to jump off before you get destroyed along with Garrett.
Frank, I don't want to hear this.
We're talking about your career here, Bill. Your life. You're a young guy. We know you're working that Castro thing.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. Look, we know Oswald didn't pull that trigger. Castro did. But if that comes out, there's going to be a war, boy. Millions of people are going to die. And that's a hell of a lot more important than Jim Garrison. God damn it. Look at me when I talk to you. You're goddamn too selfish.
Shut up!
Shut up! You got a brain in that thick skull of yours. Listen to me. You listen real hard. Now get in the car.
Yes?
Glad you came. Sorry about the precautions.
Well, I just hope it was worth my while, Mr.
I could give you a false name, but I won't. Just call me X.
I've already been warned by the agency, Mr. Whoever, so this is another type of threat.
Not with the agency, Mr. Garrison. And I assume if you've come this far, what I have to say interests you. But I'm not going to name names and tell you who or what I represent, except to say you're close. You're closer than you think. Okay? Everything I'm going to tell you is classified top secret. I was a soldier, Mr. Garris. Two wars. I was one of those secret guys in the Pentagon that supplies the military hardware, the planes, bullets, rifles, for what we call black operations. Black ops. Assassinations, coup d'etat, rigging elections, propaganda, psych warfare, and so forth. World War II, I was in Romania, Greece, Yugoslavia. I helped evacuate part of the Nazi intelligence apparatus just before the end of the war. And we used those guys in the fight against the communists. In Italy, 48, we stole the elections. France, 49, broke the strikes. Overthrew Carino in the Philippines, Arbenz in Guatemala, Mozadegh in Iran. We were in Vietnam in 54, Indonesia 58, Tibet 59, got the Dalai Lama out. We were good. Very good. Then we get into the Cuban thing. Not so good. Set up all the bases for the invasion. Supposed to take place in October 62.
Mm-hmm.
Khrushchev sent the missiles to resist the invasion. Kennedy didn't invade. We were standing out there with our dicks in the wind. A lot of pissed off people, Mr. Garris. Understand? I'll come to that later. So, 1963. I spent much of September 63 working on the Kennedy plan for getting all U.S. personnel out of Vietnam by the end of 1965. This plan was one of the strongest, most important papers issued from the Kennedy White House.
His National Security Action Memo 263 ordered home the first 1,000 troops for Christmas. But then in November, 1 week after the murder of Vietnamese President Diem in Saigon and 2 weeks before the assassination of our president, a strange thing happened to me.
The Panama... T-47.
The point is, the weapons need to be with the troops. That's...
Colonel? I got a note saying you want to see me, General.
I do indeed. You are going to the South Pole.
I am?
You are. Dr. Mooney's got all the details. I want you to check with him. Have yourself a nice vacation.
I was sent by my superior officer, we'll call him Y. I was sent by General Y to the South Pole as the military escort for a group of international VIPs. I was on my way back in New Zealand when the president was killed. Now, Oswald was charged at 7 p.m. Dallas time with Tippett's murder. That's 2 o'clock in the afternoon of the next day, New Zealand time. But already, their papers had the entire history of this unknown 24-year-old man, Oswald. Studio picture, detailed biographical data, Russian information, and were pretty sure of the fact that he killed the president alone, although it took them 4 more hours before they even charged him with that crime in Dallas. Felt to me as if... well, that cover story was being put out, like we would in a black op. Anyway, after I came back, I asked myself, why was I, the chief of special ops, selected to travel to the South Pole at that time to do a job that any number of others could have done? And I wondered if it could have been because one of my routine duties, if I had been in Washington, would have been to arrange for additional security in Texas. So I decided to check it out. And sure enough, I found out that someone had told the 112th Military Intelligence Group at 4th Army Headquarters at Fort Sam Houston to stand down that day over the protest of the unit commander, Colonel Wright.
I believe it's a mistake.
This is significant because it is standard operating procedure, especially in a known hostile city like Dallas, to supplement the Secret Service. I mean, even if we had not allowed the bubble top to be removed from the limousine, we would have placed at least 100 to 200 agents on the sidewalk without question. I mean, only a month before in Dallas, UN Ambassador Adlai Stevenson spit on and hit. There had already been several attempts on de Gaulle's life in France. We would have arrived days ahead of time, studied the route, checked all the buildings, never would have allowed all those wide open empty windows overlooking Dealey, never. We'd have had our own snipers covering the area. The minute the window went up, they'd have been on the radio. We'd have been watching the crowd, packages rolled up, newspapers, coat over an arm. Never would have let a man open an umbrella along the way. Never would have allowed that limousine to slow down to 10 miles an hour, much less take that unusual curve at Houston and Elm. You would have felt an army presence in the streets that day. None of this happened. It was a violation of the most basic protection codes we have, and it is the best indication of a massive plot in Dallas. Now, who could have best done this? Black ops, Mr. Garrison. People in my business, people like my superior officer, could have called Colonel Reich and said, look, we have another unit coming from so-and-so, providing security. You'll stand down. I mean, that day, in fact, there were some individual Army intelligence people in Dallas. I'm still trying to figure out who and why. But they weren't protecting the client. And, of course, Oswald. Army intel had a Harvey Lee Oswald on file. And all those files have been destroyed. Many strange things were happening, and your Lee Harvey Oswald had nothing to do with them. We had the entire cabinet on a trip to the Far East. We had one-third of a combat division returning from Germany in the air above the United States at the time of the shooting. At 12:34 p.m., the entire telephone system went out in Washington for a solid hour. And on the plane back to Washington, word was radioed from the White House Situations Room to Lyndon Johnson that one individual performed the assassination. Does that sound like a bunch of coincidences to you, Mr. Garrison?
No.
Not for one moment. The cabinet was out of the country to get their perceptions out of the way. Troops were in the air for possible riot control. The telephones didn't work to get the wrong stories from spreading if anything went wrong with the plan. Nothing was left to chance. He could not be allowed to escape alive. Well, I never thought things were the same after that. Vietnam started for real. There was an air of, I don't know, make-believe in the Pentagon and CIA. Those of us who'd been in secret ops since the beginning knew the Warren Commission was fiction. But there was something deeper, uglier. I knew Alan Dulles very well. I briefed him many a time in his house. But for the life of me, I still can't figure out why he was appointed to investigate Kennedy's death, the man who had fired him. Dulles, by the way, was General Wyeth's benefactor. I got out in 64, resigned my commission.
I never realized Kennedy was so dangerous to the establishment. Is that why?
Well, it's a real question, isn't it? Why? The how and the who is just scenery for the public. Oswald, Ruby, Cuba, the Mafia. Keeps him guessing like some kind of parlor game, prevents him from asking the most important question, why? Why was Kennedy killed? Who benefited? Who has the power to cover it up? Who? In 1961, right after the Bay of Pigs, very, very few people know about this, all right? I participated in drawing up National Security Action Memos 55, 56, 57. These are crucial documents, classified top secret. But basically in them, Kennedy instructed General Lemnitz, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, that from here on forward, the Joint Chiefs of Staff would be wholly responsible for all covert paramilitary action in peacetime. This basically ended the reign of the CIA. He splintered it, as JFK promised he would, into 1,000 pieces. And now he was ordering the military to help him do it. This was unprecedented. I can't tell you the shockwaves that this sent along the corridors of power in Washington. This and, of course, the firing of Alan Dulles, Richard Bissell, and General Charles Cabell. All of them sacred cows in intel since World War II. You got some very upset people here. Kennedy's directives were never really implemented because of bureaucratic resistance. But one of the results was the Cuban operation was turned over to my department as Operation Mongoose. Mongoose was pure black ops. It was secretly based in the South Campus of Miami's University, which was the largest domestic CIA station. Budgeted annually over hundreds of millions of dollars. 300 agents, 7,000 select Cubans, 50 fake business fronts for laundering money. They waged non-stop war against Castro. Industrial sabotage, crop burning, the works. And all of this came under the control of General Juan. All he did was take the rules of covert warfare he'd used abroad and brought them into this country. Now he had the people, the equipment, the bases, and the motivation. And don't underestimate the budget cuts that Kennedy called for in March of 63 either. Nearly 52 military installations in 25 states, 21 overseas bases. You're talking big money. You know how many helicopters have been lost in Vietnam? Nearly 3,000 so far. Who makes that? Bell Helicopter. Who owns Bell? Well, Bell was nearly bankrupt when the First National Bank of Boston approached the CIA about developing the helicopter for Indochina usage. How about the F-111 fighter? General Dynamics of Fort Worth, Texas. Who owns that? Find out the defense budget since the war began. 75, going on 100 billion. Nearly 200 billion would be spent before it's over. In 1949, it was 10 billion. No war, no money. The organizing principle of any society, Mr. Garrison, is for war. The authority of the state over its people resides in its war powers. And Kennedy wanted to end the Cold War in his second term. He wanted to call off the moon race in favor of cooperation with the Soviets. He signed a treaty with the Soviets to ban nuclear testing. He refused to invade Cuba in 1962, and he set out to withdraw from Vietnam. But all of that ended on the 22nd November, 1963. As early as 1961, they knew Kennedy was not going to go to war in Southeast Asia. Like Caesar, he is surrounded by enemies and something's underway. But it has no face. Yet everybody in the loop knows.
You can forget about your combat troops.
He told McNamara he is going to pull out the goddamned advisors. He fucked us in Laos, and now he is going to fuck us in goddamn Vietnam.
He won't implement it before the election. He can't afford to.
I hear the NSC meeting was a real barn burner.
I wouldn't have missed it for the world. Heads are going to roll everywhere. Did you hear what Lemnitzer did?
What happened?
Kennedy tried to rub Lem's nose in shit, saying if we didn't go into Cuba, which is so close, why should we go into Vietnam, which is so far away?
Well, a bitch, there he goes again. He's got his hands on the chicken switch.
Anyway, Lem said that the chiefs still think we ought to go into Cuba.
Money's this thing. Big money. $100 billion. Kennedy brothers target voting districts for those defense dollars. They give TFX fighter contracts only to those counties that are going to make a difference in 64, and the people in the loop, they fight back. Their way.
We have to control the intelligence from Saigon.
Well, just don't let McNamara start sticking his damn nose in this thing. Every time he goes over to Saigon on some fucking fact-finding mission, he comes back and just scares the shit out of the president. Now, won't Max Taylor own him night and day? Like a fly on shit. Now, you control McNamara. And you control Kennedy.
I think it started like that. In the wind. Defense contractors, big oil bankers, just conversations, nothing more. Then a call is made, maybe to someone like my superior officer, General Y.
Yeah.
We're going. We need your help.
When?
In the fall, probably in the south. We want you to come up with a plan.
I can do that.
Everything is cellularized. No one has said he must die. There's been no vote, nothing's on paper. There's no one to blame. It's as old as the crucifixion. Military firing squad. Five bullets, one blank, no one's guilty. Because everyone in the power structure who knows anything has a plausible deniability. There are no compromising connections except at the most secret point. But what's paramount is that it must succeed. No matter how many die, no matter how much it costs, the perpetrators must be on the winning side and never subject to prosecution for anything by anyone. That is a coup d'etat. Kennedy announces the Texas trip in September. At that moment, second Oswalds start popping up all over Dallas, where they have the mayor and the cops in their pocket. General Y flies in the assassins. Maybe from the special camp we keep outside Athens, Greece, probes. Maybe locals, Cubans, mafia hire, separate teams. Does it really matter who shot from what rooftop? Part of the scenery, right? I keep thinking about that day. Tuesday, the 26th of November, the day after they buried Kennedy.
Gentlemen, I want you to know I'm not going to let Vietnam go like China did. I'm personally committed. And I'm not going to take one soldier out of there till they know we mean business in Asia.
Lyndon Johnson signs National Security Memo 273, which essentially reverses Kennedy's new withdrawal policy and gives a green light to covert action against North Vietnam, which provoked the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Just get me elected. I'll give you a damn war.
In that document lay the Vietnam War.
I can't believe it. They killed him because he wanted to change things. In our time.
They've been doing it
in our country.
Kings are killed, Mr. Garrison. Politics is power. Nothing more. Oh, don't take my word for it. Don't believe me. Do your own work, your own thinking.
The size of this is beyond me. Testify.
Me?
Testify.
No chance in hell. No, I'd be arrested and gagged, maybe sent to an institution, maybe worse, you too. I can give you the background. You have to find the foreground, the little things. Keep digging. Remember, you're the only person to bring a trial in the murder of John Kennedy. That's important. It's historic.
I haven't yet. I don't have much of a case.
You don't have a choice anymore. You've become a significant threat to the national security structure. They would have killed you already, but you got a lot of light on you. Instead, they're trying to destroy your credibility. They already have in many circles in this town. Be honest. Your only chance is to come up with a case. Something. Anything. Make arrests. Stir the shitstorm. Hope to reach a point of critical mass that'll start a chain reaction of people coming forward. Then the government'll crack. Remember, fundamentally, people are suckers for the truth. And the truth is on your side, Bubba. I just hope you get a break.
Charged with conspiracy and entering into an agreement with other persons for the specific purpose of committing the crime of murder of President John F. Kennedy. We have a warrant to search the premises. It's my duty to inform you at this time you have the right to remain silent. You have the right to an attorney.
Name, first, middle, and last.
Clay Laverne Shaw.
Address? 1313 Dauphine Street, New Orleans.
Shaw!
Ever use any aliases?
Shaw!
Clay Burton.
Mr. Clark, are you aware of the charges filed by District Attorney Garrison?
Yes, Mr. Shaw was included in our investigation. There was no connection found at all.
And why, if they did, is his name not mentioned once in the entire 26 volumes of the Warren Report, even if it is to clear his name? I doubt this attorney general would qualify for my staff.
Mr. Garrison has presented absolutely nothing publicly which would contradict our findings. I know of no fact which would refute the commission's conclusion that Lee Oswald was the lone killer.
What's your reaction to the Chief Justice?
Well, I congratulate Mr. Shaw. Most defendants have to wait for trial before they're allowed to produce sacred cows like the Chief Justice of the land as a character witness, who is, of course, not under oath to free from the law of the perjury.
Mr. Sheriff, you realize you're damaging the credibility of the country, possibly destroying it?
Let me ask you, is a government worth preserving when it lies to the people?
Are you trying to convince us
to become a dangerous country, sir, when you cannot trust anyone anymore, when you cannot tell the truth?
The JFK Conspiracy. The case of Jim Garrison.
After several weeks
of investigation in New Orleans, a team of reporters has learned that District Attorney Jim Garrison and his staff have intimidated, bribed, and even drugged witnesses in their attempt to prove a conspiracy involving New Orleans businessman Clay Shaw in the murder of John F. Kennedy. John Chancler was a cellmate of Willie O'Keefe's at Angola.
He said he'd be cut loose if he got the days off.
I sent him up for burglary.
Mr. Torres, you said the officer...
And there's his old buddy, Miguel Torres. I mean, we sent him up, too. Right,
they wanted me to say Shaw was Bertrand. They said they'd get me a pardon.
Janet Williams comments on Willie O'Keefe's descriptions of having met Oswald.
That's not the Lee I knew. Absolutely not. I think Mr. O'Keefe must have seen someone he thought was Lee Oswald.
I didn't talk to nobody after the assassination. I was on drugs at the hospital. Like I told the FBI, that call was a figment of my imagination.
Personally, I think he's quite ill mentally. With one half of his mind, he's able to go out and fabricate evidence.
Then by some osmosis, he is able to convince the other half that the fabrication is the truth.
Well, I wouldn't worry about it, Liz. There's only about 20, 30 million people watching this tonight. Guess my reputation's all right with people watching laughing.
Because in some way, Mr. Garrison is indebted and tied to the mob. The more one looks at Jim Garrison, the more one finds he has destroyed reputations, spread fear and suspicion, and worst of all, exploited this nation's sorrow and doubt. Jim Garrison has said, quote, "Let justice be done though the heavens fall." He seeks the truth. So do we.
Dr. Martin Luther King called his beautiful dream, expressed so dramatically during the 1963 March on Washington, was shattered tonight in Memphis, Tennessee, by an assassin's bullet. Police seem to think that the single shot came from across the street. They say that they have found the Browning automatic rifle fitted with a marksman's scope on a sidewalk.
I get it.
Hello? Hello, is this Jim Garrison's daughter?
Yeah.
Virginia or Elizabeth?
Virginia.
Virginia, you're a lucky little girl. Your daddy's at the Journal Beauty Contest. Would you like to be in a beauty contest?
I don't know.
God, my God, what have they done?
Yeah.
It's legend time.
Uh-huh.
It's legend time.
Gathering spot for many. That sounds fun. Police closed
off several. And you get off from school. Honey, 3 o'clock every day. Okay, Virginia, that's all I need to know. I'll
Mommy,
see you again
I'm going to be in a beauty contest.
Who is this? Who is this? Hello?
Jim, did you enter Virginia in a beauty contest? A man just called. He wanted to know everything. Her height, her weight,
honey,
where
I'm
she...
crackpot. Martin Luther King was killed in Memphis.
Honey, your daughter's life's just been threatened.
Just a crank making calls. Happens a dozen times a day at the office.
Our home, Jim. A kidnapper, a murderer,
yes,
who knows
Liz,
what?
Only cowards make crank calls.
How do you know?
Nothing's going to happen.
How do you even know what goes on in this house anymore? You're too busy making speeches. Getting every crazed class in Louisiana after us. I'm leaving. I've taken the kids.
Right,
I'm leaving.
Come on.
I can't stand it anymore.
The government wants you to be scared.
You and
right?
your government.
The government wants everybody to be scared to speak out.
What's yep. the matter
they
with
count
you?
On it. There's nothing
Don't
to be scared of.
Don't you have any feelings? Your own daughter. What kind of man are you?
I'll take them up to my mother's if it makes you feel any better, all right? You spend a week.
What's
I'll
a week
I'll change the locks, the phone lines. I'll even get a bodyguard. Just get all these cells.
Honey, before this Kennedy thing, nothing mattered in this world more than your children. The other night, Jasper tried to talk to you. What? You didn't even notice he was there. He came to me bawling his little eyes out.
I promise,
he's sensitive,
right?
honey.
I promise I'll make more
you.
Time for Jasper.
Is it such a chore?
God damn it,
I
if I said I'll spend
you.
More time with him, I'll spend more time with him, all right? And I cannot fight you and the whole world, too, Liz.
I'm not fighting you. I'm trying to reach you. You've changed.
Well, of course I've changed. My eyes have opened. And once they're open, believe me, what used to look normal seems insane. And now, King, don't you think this has something to do with that? Can't you see?
I don't want to see, goddammit. I'm tired. I've had enough. You're ruining this man Shaw's life. You're attacking him because he's a homosexual.
That's not why I'm attacking him.
Did you ever for once stop to consider what he was feeling?
You don't believe me?
I don't know.
All this time, you never believed me.
I just want to raise our children and live a normal life. I want my life back.
So do I, goddammit. I have a life too, you know. You just can't bury your head in the sand like some goddamn ostrich, Liz. It's not about our well-being, all right? It's not about our 2 cars and our TVs and your kitchen. It's about our kids growing up in a shit old lives, and I'm angry about it. And my life is fucked because of it. If you could see it that way, Liz, you see that your life is fucked too.
You never talked to me this way before, Jim.
If you don't want to support me, fine. I can understand that. But don't go start making threats about taking the children.
I'm not making any threats. I'm leaving
don't
you.
Don't make any threats.
I'm taking
go on then. Fine,
I'm
get out.
It. I am.
Go hide somewhere. Join the rest of them. They'll tell you I'm crazy. You get plenty of people to tell you I'm crazy. Don't have any problems fill out your divorce papers on me. But somebody's got to try, goddammit. Somebody.
Are we going away, Daddy?
I don't know, Jasper.
Because of Kennedy? Are the same people going to kill us, Pop?
No, Jasper. Nobody's going to kill us.
I'm scared. I don't like it when you and Mommy fight.
I know, I don't like it either, honey.
Why do we have to leave? Don't you love us anymore?
Danny loves both of you, okay? And there's nothing wrong with feeling a little scared, Jasper. Telling the truth can be a scary thing sometimes. It scared President Kennedy, and he was a brave man. But if you let yourself be too scared, then you let the bad guys take over the country, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then everybody gets scared.
Stay with Mom, Papa. Please.
Oh,
damn, here's another one. The U.S. attorney in Washington declined to serve our subpoena on Allen Dulles, Charles Cabell, CIA Director Richard Hemp, any FBI agent we name.
Well, what'd you expect from a pig but a grunt?
Without them, it's going to be near impossible, Chief, to prove Shaw's connection to the CIA.
What the hell is going on? And never before has an extradition request from this office been refused.
We haven't tried to get Julianne Mercer in here.
No, she could get hurt.
What?
You believe what's happening, these other people know.
Yeah, but she's the best damn witness we have.
I just don't want to do it. That's all. Now, what else?
Well, you got your hate mail here. And your fan mail here. The bad news is that the IRS requested an audit of your income from this office.
Well, I expected that 2 months ago. And they're wasting their time. The bad news is the National Guard just asked me to resign after 18 years. Yeah, well, maybe that's the good news. Never was as good as combat anyway. This is. Bill, any more on Oswald or Shaw?
Yeah. They were seen together in Clinton in early September. The Civil Rights Movement was running a voters registration drive. Rumor is Shaw, a local boy, was working on some arms deal to discredit the civil rights movement. Nobody really knows what they're doing there, but, hell, they stood out like cotton balls. I got whites and colored, saw them, but the last time I checked, there was nothing illegal with registering to vote. We still got the Negro junkie, Vernon Bundy, who saw him talking at the seawall near Lake Pontchartrain. But hell, it's tough, boss. Nobody wants to talk about Shaw. He's just...
You keep saying, see, you keep saying that. You're not digging.
I keep saying what?
You're not digging.
I'm not digging.
You're not digging.
You do my job, I do your job.
I think Clinton is a breakthrough now. Right? And Shaw denies ever knowing Pharaoh Oswald, right?
Right.
That proves he's a liar. Keep on it, Bill.
Oswald went to see the FBI 2 weeks before the assassination.
Can I see Special Agent Hostie, please?
I'm sorry, he's not in. Can someone else help you?
Seems that Special Agent Hostie made 3 visits to Janet Williams' house, supposedly to keep an eye on Marina. He left a note. Hostie told a Dallas newspaper man that it was a warning to him to stop questioning Marina at home when Oswald was not present. She was not a citizen, so possibly he was threatening to deport her back to Russia. But what the note really said, no one knows.
There's no trouble.
Hostie tore it up and flushed it down the
Get
toilet.
Get rid of it, Hostie.
It's just speculation, people, but what if the note was describing the assassination attempt on JFK? Come on, people, think. That's the only reason to destroy it. Because if it was any kind of threat, like Hostie said, they would have kept it. Because it makes her case against the angry lone nut that much stronger. Remember the New Orleans meeting with Agent Quigley the day he got arrested? There again, Quigley destroyed the notes from the interview. I think we can raise a possibility that Oswald not only was an informant, but that he may well have been the original source we have for the telex dated November 17th, warning of Kennedy's assassination in Dallas on November 22nd. Well, William Walter, the night clerk on the duty in the FBI office here, he gave me a copy of this. Said it went all over the country. Nothing was done. And the motorcade went ahead on schedule. And this wasn't even mentioned in the Warren report.
Determined that a militant revolutionary group may attempt to assassinate President Kennedy on his proposed trip to Dallas, Texas.
Shortly after the assassination, Walter says that the telex was removed from all the files in all the cities as an obvious embarrassment to the Bureau. I believe Oswald was sending information through Hosty. I have a hunch that from the get-go, Oswald had infiltrated this group, probably Cubans, right-wing extremists. He was told to be at the book depository that day by his handlers to either prevent the assassination or to take part in it. I mean, they could have told him anything. Either they were going to close down the plotters that day, or they were going to simulate an attack on Kennedy to whip up public opinion so that Kennedy would have to reverse his policies on communism. It doesn't really matter what they told him.
Because it will have
he was under order.
Down to
he was a foot soldier.
And you can't miss. He is a dead duck.
I don't buy it, Chief. Why would the FBI cover it up? A telex that disappears from every single FBI office in this country?
There's a word, Bill. Orders.
Or a cover-up? Jesus, Bill, what? Don't you have enough proof for the FBI's complete?
Maybe I
yet?
Got just a little bit more respect for this country's institutions.
My God!
What do you need?
Huh? You tell me how the hell you gonna keep a conspiracy going on between the mob, the CIA, the FBI, and Army Intelligence, and who the hell knows what else, when you know for a fact you can't keep a secret in this room between 12 people. We got leaks everywhere. I mean, we are going to trial here, y'all. I mean, what the hell do we really got? Oswald, Ruby, Bannister, Farrah are dead. Shaw, I mean, maybe he's an agent, I don't know. But as a covert operator in my book, he is wide open for blackmail because of his homosexuality.
Shaw's a toehold, Bill. Now, I don't know exactly what he is or where he fits, and I don't really care. I do know he's lying through his teeth, and I'm not going to let go of him.
Yeah, and for those reasons, you're going to go to trial against Clay Shaw, Chief. Well, you're going to lose. We should be investigating our mafia leads here in New Orleans. Now, I can buy that a hell of a lot easier than I can the government. Ruby is all mob, knows Oswald, sets him up. Hopper, Trafficante, Marcellus, they hire some guns to do Kennedy. And the government doesn't want to open up a whole can of worms there because it used the mob to try to get to Castro. You know, Castro being assassinated by the mob by us, it sounds pretty wild to junk you, citizen. So, they close the book on JFK. Makes perfect sense to me.
I don't doubt their involvement, Bill, but at a lower level.
Oh, come on.
Could the mob change the parade route, Bill? Or eliminate the protection for the president? Could the mob send Oswald to Russia and get him back? Could the mob get the FBI, the CIA, and the Dallas police to make a mess of the investigation? I mean, could the mob get the Warren Commission appointed to cover it up? Could the mob wreck the autopsy? I mean, could the mob influence the national media to go to sleep? And since when has the mob used anything but 38s for hits up close? Mob wouldn't have the guts or the power for something of this magnitude. Assassins need payrolls, schedules, times, orders. This was a military-style ambush from start to finish. This was a coup d'etat with Lyndon Johnson waiting in the wings.
Oh, okay, so now you're saying Lyndon Johnson was involved? The President of the United States?
I know this, Bill. Lyndon Johnson got $1 billion for his Texas friend Brown and Root to dredge Comron Bay for the military in Vietnam.
Boss, you calling the President a murderer?
Well, if I'm so far from the truth, why is the FBI bugging our offices? Huh? Why are witnesses being bought off and murdered? Why are federal agencies blocking our extraditions and subpoenas when we were never blocked before?
I don't know. Maybe there's some rogue element in the government or something.
Full-blown conspiracy to cover it up? You ever read your Shakespeare, Bill?
Yeah, I do.
Julius Caesar? Brutus and Cassius, they too are honorable men. Who killed Caesar? 10, 12 senators. All it takes is one Judas, Bill. A few people on the inside. Pentagon, CIA.
This is Louisiana, Chief. I mean, how the hell do you know who your daddy is? Because your mama told you so. You're way out there taking a crap in the wind, boss. And I, for one, am not going along on this one.
Do
Chief, I've had my doubts all along about Bill. Been fighting us all along.
Well, we need him back.
Boss, Broussard wasted a whole damn month trying to prove that mob boys like Jack Ruby and Brading are hooked up with Hunt Oil.
I don't trust the guy.
I will not hear this, gentlemen. Now, I value Bill as much as any person here. It's time we all made room for someone else's ideas, including me. Maybe Oswald is what everyone says he is, and I'm just plain dumb about it.
I've seen him copying files, leaving here late at night.
I just plain don't trust
you. You two didn't hear what I said. Now, I said I will not tolerate infighting among the staff.
I'm afraid I cannot work with Bill Broussard anymore.
Are you giving me an ultimatum, Lou?
What?
Are you giving me an ultimatum?
Well, if that's what you want to call it. No, I never thought it'd come to this. I guess I am.
Well, I will not have any damn ultimatums put to me, Lou. I'll accept your resignation.
Well, you sure got it. You're one stubborn son of a bitch. And you're making a hell of a mistake.
Boss, I think you're being a little hard.
No, I don't think I am, Susie. Anyone else?
And now, Jerry, here's Jim Garrison, the District Attorney of New Orleans, Louisiana.
Welcome, Attorney Garrison. So, you're investigating the murder of President Kennedy. You know, I must say, we've heard some strange things coming out of your office in New Orleans. First, we heard that the Cuban exiles killed the president, then the mob. Now, your latest theory seems to be that the CIA and the FBI and the Pentagon and the White House all combined in some elaborate conspiracy to kill John Kennedy. Let me ask you, is there anyone besides Lee Harvey Oswald who you think didn't conspire to kill the president?
Well, let's just say this, Jerry. I've stopped beating my wife.
Well, maybe you should ask Lyndon Johnson.
We know he has some answers.
Now, there have been a number of reports in reputable news media, Time, Newsweek, our own NBC, that you've gone way beyond the legal means available to you as a prosecutor, that you have intimidated, even drugged witnesses, bribed them, urged them to commit perjury. Do you have a response to this?
Your faith in the veracity of the major media is touching, Jerry. It indicates that the age of innocence is not yet over. But ask yourself, if we'd learned on November 22nd, 1963, that the Premier of Russia had been shot from a Moscow office building by a lonely capitalist sympathizer who himself was then liquidated by a patriotic Muscovite within 48 hours while surrounded by armed police, I think it would be pretty apparent to any free-thinking person that a coup d'etat and a transfer of power had just taken place in the Soviet Union. And we would not be asking questions or attacking Jim Garrison or his record. We would, in a free-thinking society, be asking hard questions about why he was killed and what forces were opposed to him.
Jim, you know, there are some people who might say you're paranoid.
Maybe I better show you some pictures so you can begin to understand what it is I'm talking about. These are arrests. Now, these arrests were photographed minutes after the assassination. Now, they were never shown to the American public.
Jim, I'm sorry. These pictures can't show up on TV.
Well, sure they can.
No, I'm sorry, they can't.
No, the camera can pick these.
Jim, I'm sorry. They can't. We have libel laws, you know?
Those men you just saw were arrested in Dallas minutes after the assassination. They were never seen again. No record of arrest, no mugshot, no
Jim,
fingerprints.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back right after these commercials.
Who were they?
Bill, what the hell are you doing here?
I'm sorry about the other day, Chief. I didn't mean to walk out on you like that.
Bill, you came all the way to tell me the obvious.
No, boss, look. I just got word there's going to be an attempt to kill you somewhere between here and New Orleans. A mob guy was brought down by Shaw from Canada. This is serious, Chief. You're going to need a bodyguard tonight in Phoenix.
Bill, when you're in the Army, did you have a chance to find out what order meant?
Yes.
You happen to remember my ordering everyone on the staff not to participate in passing on these endless rumors about how somebody's going to be killed?
Yes, I do, boss, but this is...
No, there is no but. There is no but in a military situation, Broussard. I don't appreciate you dumping this paranoid garbage on me. And I don't appreciate your inability to follow a simple order, especially when it means I'm personally going to end up paying for your flight back to New Orleans. Now let's get you a ticket.
Boss, I'm sorry. I'm just looking out for you.
Get a receipt.
Bad news. Bill's turned. I think he's given everything we got to the feds.
We studied the memos and there was nothing there, Chief. Nothing. We went to confront him. The landlady said that the son of a bitch just took off. Left everything.
It's unbelievable. I'm sorry. Maddie, could you get Mr. Garrison a drink, please?
Something sure scared him.
Well, Bill doesn't scare that easy. Somebody got to his thinking. He was never that good a thinker.
Well, he sure fooled us.
No, don't turn it down. Turn it up. I want to see
public
this.
Public opinion polls.
Well, you know what's happened? He's winning.
Leading Senator Eugene McCarthy of Minnesota.
Both never make it.
Anti-Vietnam War candidates.
If he wins, they'll kill him. Obviously striking a he'll stop the war. Voters.
Whoever wins tonight will...
They're going to kill him before they let him be president.
...Vice President Humphrey to win the nomination in Chicago in August. That man
thank
now
you,
seems to be... Senator
boss,
Kennedy.
With Broussard, they have everything. All our witnesses, our strategy for the trial, we got to double-check all his work. There could be false leads. We can't go to trial. We don't have a prayer.
I don't think so, Al.
I have to agree with Al, boss. This is not one we're going to come out on.
You remember the Hemingway West story, the old man in the sea? The old fisherman manages to catch this great fish. Fish so huge that he has to tie it to the side of the boat in order to get it back in. But by the time it reached the shore, fish had long since been picked apart by sharks. Nothing was left but the skeleton.
And that's what's going to happen to us.
Then what we go to all this trouble for, boss?
It's a means to an end. Now, this war has two fronts. In the court of law, we hope against the odds to nail Clay Shaw on a conspiracy charge. In the court of public opinion, it could take another 25, 30 years for the truth to come out. But at least we're going to strike the first blow.
What if you're wrong?
Perhaps we can say or feel that we've made a some improvement.
I never thought for a second I was, honey. Yes. Will you come to the trial?
And if you do not do this, then who will
do this? With 53% of the precincts reporting, Senator Kennedy continues to hold a lead of 48-41% over Senator McCarthy. CBS News has projected Senator Robert Kennedy the winner of the crucial California primary.
And now what has been going on within the United States over the period of the last 3 years? The divisions, the violence, the disenchantment with our society, the divisions whether it's between blacks and whites, between the poor and the more affluent, or between age groups, or on the war in Vietnam. That we can start to work together. We are a great country and a selfish country and a compassionate country. And I intend to make that my basis for running and over the period of time. My thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's get there.
They killed Robert Kennedy.
No.
They shot him down.
Oh, my God. Oh, both of them. Both brothers. You were right.
For the first time, I feel really scared.
Clay Bertram. That's the man I saw at David Ferris.
That's who you say you saw. A confessed homosexual. Convicted of pandering and solicitation. A man who has lied about everything and now wants to be taken at his
word. That man right there. Yes, sir. He was at the Pontchartrain Wall with the man who shot the president. I remember him. Because of his limp.
A heroin addict injecting himself at the wall, barely conscious of his surroundings.
Is that the man?
That was the man right there. He dropped Oswald off on the voters line.
I remember because there were the only white strangers around that morning. The big black Cadillac up here made me think they might be FBI.
Marshal, welcome to town.
If there's anything we can do to help you, please let us know.
Said he was a representative of one international trademark in New Orleans.
More than 5 years ago for 2 minutes? It's fair to say you could be mistaken.
It's just a figment of my imagination. The cat's stealing you. The oyster's shucking you, I told him. You got the right ta-ta, but the wrong ho-ho. Boyfriend is not sharp. Scout's honor. And you can tell him I said so.
Objection, Your Honor. This office has won a conviction of perjury against Dean Andrews on this matter.
Exception taken. That case is on appeal. Mr. Goldberg, you claim that you met David Ferry and Clay Shaw on a vacation trip from your accounting business in New York. You had drinks, and under the influence discussed killing Kennedy. Is that not so?
Yes, I did.
Is it not also true that you fingerprinted your daughter when she went to Louisiana State University?
Yes, sir, I did.
And is it not also true that you fingerprinted her when she returned at the end of the semester?
Yes, I did.
Why?
Well, I wanted to make sure that she was the same girl I sent away.
And why are you...
He was one of Bruce Lawrence's witnesses, Chief. I'm sorry, he was totally sane when we took his affidavit.
Your Honor, we called police officer Aloysius Habercourse to the stand.
I'm going to have to ask the jury to leave the courtroom.
Gentlemen, will you please rise and follow me?
Name, first, middle, and last. Clay Laverne Shaw.
The defendant did not have his lawyer present when asked.
From time immemorial, it's been standing book and procedure to ask an alias.
I call him as I see him.
Ever use any aliases?
Shaw.
Clay Burton.
Mr. Shaw, what are you asking today?
There's no constitutional requirement that there's a lawyer has
I'm
to be present.
I'm ruling it inadmissible.
Well, Harriet, that's our case.
If that's your case, you didn't have a case. I wouldn't believe anything Habergas said anyway.
I can't believe you're saying this in the courtroom.
Well, I am saying it. Bring in the jury.
Oswald?
No, I did not.
Ever called Dean Andrews?
No, I did not.
And have you ever met David Ferry?
No. Wouldn't even know what he looked like if it hadn't been for the pictures I've been shown.
Did you ever use the alias Clay Bertrand?
No, I did not.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw.
Well, a very great actor has just given us a great performance, Your Honor, but we are nowhere closer to the truth. Let it be noted that my office is charging Clay Shaw with outright perjury on the 15 answers he's given in this courtroom today. Not one word of truth having escaped his
lips. You're out of order, Jim Boy. Now sit down.
That's the man right there. That's his sign right off.
Of an international trademark.
He's saying this in the courtroom. Prove there was a conspiracy involving Clay Shaw. We must first prove that there was more than one man involved in the assassination. To do that, we must look at the Zapruder film, which my office has subpoenaed. The American public has not seen that. The American public has not seen that film because it has been kept locked away in a vault for the last 5 years in the Time Life building in New York City. There's a reason for that. Watch. Picture speaks 1,000 words, doesn't it? The Warren Commission thought they had an open and shut case. 3 bullets, 1 assassin. But 2 unpredictable things happened that day that made it virtually impossible. One, the 8mm home movie taken by Abraham Zapruder while standing near the grassy knoll. And 2, the 3rd wounded man, James Tague, who was nicked by a fragment while standing near the triple underpass. The time frame, 5.6 seconds, established by the Zapruder film, left no possibility of a full shot. So the shot or fragment that left a superficial wound on Tate's cheek had to come from one of the three bullets fired from the sixth floor of the depository. That leaves just two bullets. And we know one of them was the fatal headshot that killed Kennedy. So now a single bullet remains. A single bullet now has to account for the remaining seven wounds in Kennedy and Conley. But rather than admit to a conspiracy or investigate further, the Warren Commission chose to endorse the theory put forth by an ambitious junior counselor, Arlen Specter, one of the grossest lies ever forced on the American people. We've come to know it as the magic bullet theory. The magic bullet enters the president's back, headed downward at an angle of 17 degrees. It then moves upwards in order to leave Kennedy's body from the front of his neck, wound number two, where it waits 1.6 seconds, presumably in midair, where it turns right, then left, and continues into Conley's body at the rear of his right armpit, wound number three. The bullet then heads downward at an angle of 27 degrees, shattering Conley's fifth rib and exiting from the right side of his chest, wound number four. The bullet then turns right and re-enters Conley's body at his right wrist, wound number five. Shattering the radius bone, the bullet then exits Conley's wrist, wound number six, makes a dramatic U-turn, and buries itself into Conley's left thigh, wound number seven, from which it later falls out and is found in almost pristine condition on a stretcher in a corridor of Parkland Hospital. That's some bullet. Anyone who's been in combat will tell you never in the history of gunfire has there been a bullet this ridiculous. Yet the government says it can prove it with some fancy physics in a nuclear laboratory. Of course they can. Theoretical physics can prove that an elephant can hang from a cliff with his tail tied to a daisy. But use your eyes, your common sense. The Army wound ballistics experts at Edward Arsenal fired some comparison bullets. Not one of them looked anything like this. Take a look at CE-856, an identical bullet fired through the wrist of a human cadaver. Just one of the bones smashed by the magic bullet. Seven wounds, gentlemen. Tough skin. Dense bones. This single bullet explanation is the foundation of the Warren Commission's claim of a lone assassin. And once you conclude the magic bullet could not create all seven of those wounds, you have to conclude that there was a fourth shot and a second rifleman. And if there was a second rifleman, then by definition, there had to be a conspiracy, which we believe involves the accused Clay Shaw. 51 witnesses, gentlemen of the jury, thought they heard shots coming from the grassy knoll, which is to the right in front of the president. Key witnesses that day, Charles Brim, a combat vet. Right behind, Gene Hill and Mary Moorman. S.M. Holland, Richard Dodd, James Simmons, standing on the overpass. J.C. Price, overlooking the whole plaza. William Newman, father of two children, who hit the deck on the north side of Elm. Abraham Zapruder. Each of these key witnesses has no doubt whatsoever one or more shots came from behind the picket fence. 26 trained medical personnel at Parkland Hospital saw with their own eyes the back of the president's head blasted out. Dr. Peters.
There was a large 7-centimeter opening in the right occipital parietal area. A considerable portion of the brain was missing there. Almost a fifth or possibly a quarter of the back of the head had been blasted out along with the underlying brain tissue.
What is the proper time to declare one dead for the last price?
There was also a large fragment of skull attached to a flap of the scalp. The exit hole in the rear of his head measured about 120 millimeters. 5 inches across.
Not one of the civilian doctors who examined the president at Parkland Hospital regarded his throat wound as anything but a wound of injury. but then the body was illegally moved to Washington for the autopsy. Because when a coup d'etat has occurred, there's a big difference
Texas
between an autopsy that is performed by civilian doctors and one that is performed by military doctors under order. The departure of Air Force One from Love Field that Friday afternoon was not so much a takeoff as it was a getaway with the newly sworn-in president.
Objection, Your Honor.
Sustained.
On the plane, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald's guilt was announced by the White House Situation Room to all passengers before any kind of investigation had started. The angry lone nut solution beginning to take its shape.
Objection, Your Honor.
Sustained. Mr. Garrison, would you please bottle the act?
The three Bethesda Naval Hospital doctors picked by the military left something to be desired, in so much as none of them had any experience with combat gunfire wounds. Through their autopsy, we've been able to justify 8 wounds from just 2 bullets. 3 to Kennedy, 5 to Conley.
Look what I found.
One of them being the magic bullet.
FBI?
Here.
Colonel Fink, are you saying someone told you not to dissect the neck?
I was told that the family wanted examination of the head.
Oh, Christ.
Looks like half his brain is gone.
Let's weigh it. 653 grams.
As a pathologist, it was your obligation to explore all possible causes of death, was it not?
I had the cause of death.
Your Honor, I would ask you to direct the witness to answer my question. Why did Colonel Fink not dissect the track of the bullet wound?
Obvious, tricky.
Well, I heard Dr. Hume stating that...
That's enough. That's enough. It's duly noted.
Okay, let's check the back, gentlemen.
All right.
Considerable amount of spinal fluid coming in right here.
Okay. I can feel it at the end of the wound with my finger.
That won't be necessary, Commander. Watch the ear, watch the ear.
Yes, sir.
Shot in the back. Can't call it.
He said...
Who's in charge here?
I am. I don't remember his name. You must understand, it was quite crowded. And when you are called in circumstances like that to look at the wound of the president who is dead, you don't look around a lot to ask people for their names and who they are.
But you were a qualified pathologist. Was his Army general a qualified pathologist?
Intensely no. Private to the Kennedy family.
No, but you took his orders.
Yes.
So he was directing the autopsy?
No.
No?
No, no, because there were others.
There were others?
There were others. There were admirals.
Oh, there were admirals.
Oh, yes. And when you are a lieutenant colonel in the Army, you just follow orders.
It is not our business to discuss this with anyone outside this room.
As I recall, it was Admiral Kenny, the Surgeon General of the Navy. We were specifically told not to discuss the case.
A lot of people that day were deciding what was private, none of the American people's business. The chief pathologist, Commander Humes, by his own admission, voluntarily burned his autopsy notes. President Johnson orders the blood-soaked limousine filled with bullet holes and clues to be immediately washed and rebuilt. He sends John Conley's bloody suit right to the cleaners. The Justice Department denied this office access to the autopsy photos. And when we finally get a court order to examine President Kennedy's brain in the National Archives in the hopes of finding from which direction the bullet came from, we're told by the government, your government, that the president's brain has disappeared. That's not all that's disappeared, gentlemen. With it, I think, the concept of justice.
Objection, Your Honor. Not only is Mr. Garrison insulting the federal government, but he is also introducing a highly subjective...
So what really happened that day? Let's just for a moment speculate, shall we? We have the epileptic seizure around 12:15 p.m. distracting the police, making it easier for the shooters to move into their places. The epileptic later vanished. Never checking into the hospital, the A-team gets on the sixth floor of the depository. Now, they were refurbishing the floors in the depository that week, which allowed unknown workmen in and out of the building. They moved quickly into position, just minutes before the shooting. The second spotter on the radio talking to the other two teams has the best overall view. The guard spotter. B-team, one rifleman and one spotter with the headset and access to the building, moves into the low floor of the Daltex building. The third team, the C-team, moves in behind the picket fence above the grassy knoll where the shooter and the spotter are first seen by the late Lee Bowers in the watchtower of the rail yard. They have the best position of all. Kennedy is close and on a flat, low trajectory. Part of this team is a coordinator who's flashed security credentials at several people chasing them out of the parking lot area. Probably 2 to 3 more men are down in the crowd on L. 10 to 12 men, 3 teams, 3 shooters. The triangulation of fire Clay Shaw and David Ferry discussed 2 months before. They've walked the plaza. They know every inch. They've calibrated their sight. They've practiced on moving targets. They're ready. Kennedy's motorcade makes a turn from Maine onto Houston. It's going to be a turkey shoot. They don't shoot him coming up Houston, which is the easiest shot for a single shooter in the book depository. They wait. They wait till he gets to the killing zone between 3 rifles. Kennedy makes the final turn from Houston onto Elm, slowing down to some 11 miles an hour. The shooters across Dealey Plaza tighten, taking their aim, waiting for the radio to say, green, green, or aboard, aboard. The first shot rings out, sounding like a backfire, misses the car completely. Frame 161, Kennedy stops waving as he hears something. Conley's head turns slightly to the right. Frame 193, the second shot hits Kennedy in the throat in the front. Frame 225, the president emerging from behind the road sign. You can see that he's obviously been hit, raising his arms to his throat. The third shot, frame 232, hits Kennedy in the back, pulling him downward and forward. Conley, you will notice, shows no signs at all of being hit. He is visibly holding his Stetson, which is impossible if his wrist has been shattered. Conley is turning here now. Frame 238, the fourth shot. It misses Kennedy and takes Conley in the back. This is the shot that proves there were 2 rifles. Conley yells out, "My God, they're going to kill us all." Somewhere around this time now, another shot that misses the car completely strikes James Head down by the underpass. The car breaks. The sixth and fatal shot, frame 313, takes Kennedy in the head from the front. This is the key shot. The president going back and to his left. Shot from the front and right. Totally inconsistent with a shot from the depository. Again, back and to the left. 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 So what happens then? Pandemonium.
Get the hell out of here. We got this, buddy.
The shooters quickly disassemble their various weapons, all except the Oswald rifle. Patrolman Joe Smith rushes into the parking lot behind the picket fence. He smells gunpowder.
The character produced credentials from his pocket that showed him to be Secret Service.
Let's see your ID. You see anybody else up here?
No, keep looking.
So I accepted that and let him go and continued the search. But I regretted it because this guy looked like an auto mechanic. He had on a sports shirt and pants, but he had dirty fingernails. Afterward, it didn't ring true, but at the time, we were so pressed for time.
Yet all Secret Servicemen in Dallas that day are accounted for. None were on foot in Dealey Plaza before or after the shooting, until Dallas Secret Service Chief Forrest Oros returned to 1255. At least 12 other individuals were taken into custody by Dallas police. No record of their arrest. Men acting like hobos were being pulled off trains, marched through Dealey Plaza, photographed, and yet there's no records of their arrests. Men identifying themselves as Secret Service agents all over the place. But who was impersonating them? And where was Lee Harvey Oswald? Around 12:15, on her way out of the building to see the motorcade, Secretary Carol Arnold sees Oswald in the second floor snack room, where he said he went for a Coke.
He was in a booth on the right side of the room.
He's by himself, as usual, and I'm here to be having his lunch. I didn't speak to him, but I recognized him clearly.
At the same time, Bonnie Ray Williams is supposedly eating his chicken lunch in the sixth floor. He's there until 12:15, maybe 12:20. He sees nobody. Arnold Rowland's down the street. He's looking up. He sees two men in the sixth floor window. Presumably after Bonnie Ray Williams had finished his lunch and left.
John Powell, prisoner on the sixth floor of the Dallas County jail season.
Quite a few of us guys saw them. Everybody was hollering and yelling and all that. We thought they were security guys.
If Oswald was the assassin, he was certainly pretty nonchalant about moving himself into position. Later, he told Dallas police he was in the second floor snack room. Probably told to wait there by his handler for a phone call. But the phone call never came. A maximum 90 seconds after Kennedy is shot, patrolman Marion Baker runs into Oswald in that second floor lunchroom.
Hey, you! Do you know this man? Is he an employee?
Yes, he is. The president's been shot.
But what the Warren Commission would have us believe is that after firing three bolt-action shots in 5.6 seconds, Oswald then leaves three cartridges neatly side by side in the firing nest, wipes the rifle clear of fingerprints, stashes the rifle on the other side of the loft, sprints down five flights of stairs past witnesses Victoria Adams and Sandra Stiles, who never see him. He shows up cool and calm on the second floor in front of patrolman Baker. All this within a maximum of 90 seconds of the shooting.
Hey, you! Do you know this man? Is he an employee?
Yes, he is. The president's been shot.
Is he out of breath? According to Baker, absolutely not. Assuming he is the sole assassin, Oswald is now free to escape from the building. The longer he delays, the more chance the building will be sealed by police. Is he guilty? Does he walk out the nearest staircase? No. He buys a Coke, and at a slow pace, spotted by Mrs. Reed on the second floor, he strolls out the more distant front exit, where the cops have gathered. Oddly, considering that three shots have been fired from there, nobody seals the book depository for 10 more minutes. Oswald slips out, as do several other employees. Of course, when he realized something had gone wrong and the president had been killed, he knew there was a problem. He may have even known he was the patsy. An intuition, maybe. The president killed, in spite of his warning. The phone call that never came. Perhaps fear now came to Oswald for the very first time. So Oswald returns to his rooming house around 1 p.m., a half hour after the assassination.
A man shot the president.
He puts on his jacket, grabs his .38 revolver, and leaves at 1:04. Earlene Roberts, the housekeeper, says she heard two beeps on a car horn, and two uniformed cops pulled up to the house where Oswald was in his room like it was a signal or something. Officer Tippett is shot between 1:10 and 1:15, about a mile away. And though no one actually saw him walking or jogging, the government says Oswald covered that distance. Now, giving the government the benefit of the doubt, Oswald would have had to jog a mile in 6 to 11 minutes and then commit the murder, then reverse his direction and walk three-fifths of the mile to the Texas Theater and arrive sometime before 1:30. It's also a useful conclusion, after all. Why else would Oswald kill Tippett unless he'd just shot the president and feared arrest? Domingo Benavides, closest witness to the shooting, refused to identify Oswald as the killer and was never taken to a lineup. Akilah Clemens saw the killer with another man and says they went off in separate directions. Mrs. Clemens was never taken to a lineup or to the Warren Commission. At the scene of the crime, Officer J.M. Poe marks the shelves with his initials to record the chain of evidence.
Winchester.
Those initials are not on the three cartridge cases which the Warren Commission present to him. As early as 12:44, only 14 minutes after the assassination, the police radio put out a description matching Oswald's size and build. Oswald is next seen by shoe salesman Johnny Brewer lurking along Jefferson Avenue. Oswald is scared. He begins to realize the full implications of this thing. He goes into the Texas Theater, possibly his prearranged meeting point. But though he has $14 in his pocket, he does not buy the 75-cent ticket. And Brewer has the cashier call the police. In response to the cashier's call, at least 30 officers in a fleet of patrol cars descend on the movie theater.
Now, this has to be the most remarkable example of police intuition since the Reichstag fire. And I don't buy it. They knew. Someone knew Oswald was going to be there. Rule helpfully leads the cops into the theater and from the stage points Oswald out.
There he is.
Sir, could I get you to stand up?
This is it.
Have their man. It's already been decided in Washington. By the time he was brought out from the theater, a large crowd is waiting to scream at him. Lee Oswald must have felt like Joseph K. in Kafka's The Trial. He's never told the reasons for his arrest. He doesn't know the unseen forces ranging against him. By the time he reached police headquarters, his book for murdering Tippit. No legal counsel was provided, no record made of the long questioning. By the time the sun rises the next morning, he is booked for murdering the president. The whole country, fueled by the media, assumes he is guilty. Under the guise of a patriotic nightclub owner out to spare Jackie Kennedy from having to testify at a trial, Jack Ruby is shown into an underground garage by one of his inside men on the Dallas police force. And when he is ready, Lee Harvey Oswald is brought out like a sacrificial lamb and nicely disposed of as an enemy of the people.
Oswald!
Who grieves for Lee Harvey Oswald? Buried in a cheap grave under the name Oswald? Nobody. Within minutes, false statements and press leaks about Lee Oswald circulate the globe. The official legend is created and the media takes it from there. The glitter of official lies and the epic splendor of the thought-numbing funeral of JFK confuse the eye and confound the understanding. Hitler always said, the bigger the lie, the more people will believe it. Lee Harvey Oswald, a crazed, lonely man who wanted attention and got it by killing a president, was only the first in a long line of patsies. In later years, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, men whose commitment to change and peace would make them dangerous to men who are committed to war, would follow. Also killed by such lonely, crazed men. Men who remove our guilt by making murder a meaningless act of a loner. We've all become Hamlets in our country, children of a slain father leader, whose killer still possessed the throne. The ghost of John F. Kennedy confronts us with the secret murder at the heart of the American dream. He forces on us the appalling questions of what is our Constitution made? What is our citizenship and more our lives worth? What is the future of a democracy where a president can be assassinated under conspicuously suspicious circumstances while the machinery of legal action scarcely trembles? How many more political murders disguised heart attacks, suicides, cancers, drug overdoses? How many airplane and car crashes will occur before they are exposed for what they are? Treason doth never prosper, wrote an English poet. What's the reason? For if it prosper, none dare call it treason. The American public has yet to see the Zapruder film. Why? The American public has yet to see the real x-rays and photographs of the autopsy. Why? There are hundreds of documents that could help prove this conspiracy. Why are they being withheld or burned by the government? Each time my office or you, the people, have asked those questions, demanded crucial evidence, the answer from on high has always been national security. What kind of national security do we have when we've been robbed of our leaders? What national security permits the removal of fundamental power from the hands of the American people and validates the ascendancy of invisible government in the United States? That kind of national security, gentlemen of the jury, is when it smells like it, feels like it, and looks like it. You call it what it is. Fascism. I submit to you that what took place on November 22nd, 1963, was a coup d'etat. Its most direct and tragic result was the reversal of President Kennedy's commitment to withdraw from Vietnam. The war is the biggest business in America, worth $80 billion a year. President Kennedy was murdered by a conspiracy that was planned in advance at the highest levels of our government, and it was carried out by fanatical and disciplined cold warriors in the Pentagon and CIA's covert operation apparatus, among them Clay Shaw here before you. It was a public execution, and it was covered up by like-minded individuals in the Dallas Police Department, the Secret Service, the FBI, and the White House, all the way up to including J. Edgar Hoover and Lyndon Johnson, whom I consider accomplices after the fact. The assassination reduced the president to a transient official. His job, his assignment, is to speak as often as possible of this nation's desire for peace while he acts as a business agent in the Congress for the military and their hardware manufacturers. Now, some people say I'm crazy. Southern caricature seeking higher office. Well, there is a simple way to determine if I am paranoid. Let's ask the two men who profited the most from the assassination, your former president, Lyndon Baines Johnson, and your new president, Richard Nixon, to release the 51 CIA documents pertaining to Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby. Or the secret CIA memo on Oswald's activities in Russia that was destroyed while being photocopied. All these documents are yours. The people's property. You pay for it. But because the government considers you children who might be too disturbed or distressed to face this reality, or because you might possibly lynch those involved, you cannot see these documents for another 75 years. I'm in my early 40s, so I'll have shuffled off this mortal coil by then, but I'm already telling my 8-year-old son to keep himself physically fit so that one glorious September morning in the year 2038, he can walk into the National Archives and find out what the CIA and the FBI knew. They may even push it back then. Hell, it may become a generational affair with questions passed down, father to son, mother to daughter. But someday, somewhere, someone may find out the damn truth. We better. We better, or we might just as well build ourselves another government, like the Declaration of Independence says to when the old one ain't working, just a little farther out west. An American naturalist wrote, "A patriot must always be ready to defend his country against its government." I'd hate to be in your shoes today. You have a lot to think about. You've seen much hidden evidence the American public has never seen. You know, going back to when we were children, I think that most of us in this courtroom thought that justice came into being automatically, that virtue was its own reward, that good would triumph over evil. But as we get older, we know this just isn't true. Individual human beings have to create justice, and this is not easy, because the truth often poses a threat to power, and one often has to fight power at great risk to themselves. People like S.M. Holland, Lee Bowers, Gene Hill, Willie O'Keefe have all taken that risk. They've all come forward. I have here some $8,000 in these letters sent to my office from all over the country. Quarters, dimes, dollar bills from housewives, plumbers, car salesmen, teachers, invalids. These are people who cannot afford to send money, but do. These are the ones who drive the cabs, who nurse in the hospitals, who see their kids go to Vietnam. Why? Because they care. Because they want to know the truth. Because they want the country back. Because it still belongs to us. As long as the people have the guts to fight for what they believe in. The truth is the most important value we have, because if the truth does not endure, if the government murders truth, if we cannot respect the hearts of these people, then this is not the country in which I was born in, and it's certainly not the country that I want to die in. Tennyson wrote, "Authority forgets a dying king."
This was never more true than for John F. Kennedy, whose murder was probably one of the most terrible moments in the history of our country. We the people, the jury system sitting in judgment on Clay Shaw, represent the hope of humanity against government power. In discharging your duty and bringing the first conviction in this house of cards against Clay Shaw, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Do not forget your dying king. Show this world that this is still a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. Nothing as long as you live will ever be more important. It's up to you.
Has the jury reached the verdict?
Yes, we have, Your Honor.
Please hand the verdict to the clerk. The defendant, please rise. The clerk will now read the verdict.
New Orleans, Louisiana, March 1st, 1969. We, the jury, find the defendant, Clay Shaw, not guilty.
It was a conspiracy, but whether Clay Shaw was a part of it, and how to kill a fish.
There's Jim! There's Jim!
Here, here. The American media is reporting this as a full vindication of the Warren Commission. Do you agree?
All I think it proves is you cannot run an investigation in the light of day, even questioning the intelligence operations of the United States government.
We understand that the morning paper will call for your resignation, that you're unfit to hold office, that you ruined Clay Shaw's reputation. Mr. Garrison, are you going to resign?
Hell no. I'm going to run again. And I'm going to win. Thank you.
Who do you plan to persecute next, Mr. Garrison?
If it takes me 30 years to nail every one of the assassins, then I will continue this investigation for 30 years. I owe that not only to Jack Kennedy, but to the country.
Hey, that's Clay! That's Clay Shaw!
Shaw! I'm just feeling to be acquitted.
It's been exhausting, I must say.
Now, what will you do now, Mr. Shaw?
I should go home and cook some extra fare.
Are you confident about the outcome of Clay? Do you think Garrison will be back for a second round?
Sure, he will.